Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered ChumbaCasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to ChumbaCasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Big Brother 22 Legacy Watch Roundtable. I'm your host, Taryn Armstrong, and joining me today is Sharifa. How are you doing, Sharifa?
I'm doing great, Taryn. How are you doing?
Doing well. Very excited to talk to you. Also joining me today is Brendan. How are you doing, Brendan?
I'm doing good. I was going to say it's so great to be back on the podcast before the end of Big Brother All-Stars, but I heard this afternoon that Big Brother All-Stars might be over. Did we see the end this afternoon?
You just missed it. You just missed the cutoff.
Did it end this afternoon? I guess we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah. All right. Well, we're here to talk about the week on Big Brother 22 on the live feeds and go over the players and how the season has impacted their legacy. So we're going to talk about it all. We'll see how far we get. We'll see how much there is to talk about here on a Saturday night. So here's where we are. We saw Memphis being evicted on Thursday. We saw, we saw after the feeds came back that Enzo had won the HOH, and the feeds just came back a couple hours ago, and we discovered that Cody has won the final four veto. Fully expect him to be evicting Christmas, which means our final three will be Cody, Enzo, and Nicole. Cody and Enzo, having never touched the block all season long, have the option, the potential to be the first person, I believe, ever to make it to the final two without ever technically touching the block if they win the final three HOH. So that's where we are right now. And that is why the season's probably over at this point, because Nicole at this time seems like she will be taking Cody if she wins the final three HOH. Enzo at this time seems like he will be taking Cody if he wins the final three HOH. And Cody at this time seems like he'll be taking himself if he wins the final three HOH. And based on these jury segments, it feels like Cody has this locked up already. Now those can be misleading and things can always change with everything, but it's really looking like, how does Cody not win at this point, Sharifa?
I think the only way is if Enzo and Nicole, like, last second, once they win that final HOH, they somehow snag it from Cody, which I don't see happening, and are like, wait a second, I could win if I take him out. But I think what Cody has done such a terrific job of is establishing his social relationships with both of them in a way that they will feel that they owe their Big Brother life to him, and that if they betray him, that it's not something that they're even going to consider. And that's complete skill on Cody's part, but it's going to take a lot for them to realize that they need to make the move to cut him, and I just don't see it happening, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Yes.
Not that I'm rooting for Cody's demise, but I just want to see a move happen in this end game. Just give me something meaty.
Cody has matured to full Derek. Yeah, Cody has matured to full Derek at this point. No, I mean, he's set up it really, really well. I do think it's interesting. I've listened to stuff that has been said on the podcast, and it does seem to me like Nicole really does want to win, and it will bother her if she loses. And so you want to say that if she has that opportunity, she'll take the shot. But I almost wonder if she thinks she can beat him. Like, I almost wonder if she doesn't quite understand that, right? I mean, I don't know.
I almost think it might be the reverse, in that she, like, in her head, she has burned almost every single jury member. And so she might feel that there is no way for her to win. But I have that little inkling too, Brendan, that, like, because I think Nicole has a better chance of beating Cody in a final HOH than Enzo does. And I think there could be, like, that little 10% chance where Nicole realizes the move that she needs to make. I would be more expected to see Nicole make the move than I would Cody.
Yeah.
I mean, Enzo.
Yeah, I think Nicole could make the move. It's interesting, you know, you just wonder if she can somehow sit there, no matter what happens, how much her being a former winner can help this time. And I know it worked against people in the past, like, you know, Dan and stuff, but it's like, I don't know. I mean, it could happen for her if she gets there and is able to articulate, doesn't matter how I got here, I'm here, you know? And, yeah, and it'll be interesting to see how much of that, how much of a, like, mic drop moment that actually would be, you know?
Yeah, that's something that Memphis talked about, which is that the fact that she's a former winner is more impressive. And on an all new player season like the one that Dan played in, like those players, it was a very different structure. The reason they didn't want a former winner to win again is in part because they were all new players and many of them were fans. Like somebody like Frank was like, this was my season. How dare you come on and be the star of my season? But they were also coaches at the beginning, and it really did seem like their season at the start. And there were a lot of factors that came into, you know, why they really didn't want a former winner to win again. But this is an all-star season, and the historical data we have on all-star seasons is that, especially on a season where so many of them are former Final Two losers, there is a lot of incentive to, like, hey, we want to reward the better gamer. We've been here. This is our second time, third time, fourth time. Like, we're here to, the game is the game. We're going to reward the player, regardless of, like, all that other stuff. We're not going to be, like, petty and not want to give it to a former winner. If anything, it's more impressive that she made it here as a former winner. So I do think that works in her favor. I'm just not sure that it's enough at this point.
Yeah. No, absolutely. Because Cody played the better game. If you look at it outside of anything other than this specific season, he probably played the more big game.
Well, he did. I think that argument for Nicole is sustained sitting next to anyone but Cody. I think if she's sitting next to Enzo, the fact that she's the two-time winner who made it there is going to be a lot more attractive for votes than if she's sitting next to Cody, who people see as playing a more active game, to her more passive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, thinking about, like, Nicole's decision, Because, let me start with Enzo's, because I think I know Enzo's logic, because he said some of it. Enzo's looking at it, I think, like, okay, Cody's going to be hard to beat. I know this. But if I'm going to lose to somebody, I'd rather lose to Cody than Nicole. I barely have a relationship with her. And I think I might lose to Nicole, because if I'm thinking about it, she's got Danny. She was friends with Danny outside the house. She's got Ian, her best friend Ian. She's got Devon. She was always so tight with Devon. She was Devon's untouchable, so on and so forth. If she's got Devon, she's probably got Kevin. She might have Kevin at the very least. That's four votes. If I cut Cody, she's got Cody. That's five votes. And if we don't count Kevin, it's at least four. So, like, that's really dangerous. I don't want to risk going up against Nicole if she's got at least four locked in votes, where I lose to Nicole and I cut my friend. I'd rather take my chances against my friend, who I know doesn't have some votes, or at least I think doesn't have some votes, based on the way that people talked. The way that Devon talked about Cody in the house makes it seem like Devon wouldn't vote for Cody. The way that Kevin especially talked about Cody in the house definitely made it seem to Enzo that Kevin would not vote for Cody. So he's going to feel good about those two. He knows that Cody lied to Ian a lot, and Ian was talking a lot about being a bitter jury member and that the people that burned him would never get his votes. Maybe that's another one. You know, so on and so forth. I think you can envision a scenario for Enzo where he's like, he's counting votes against Cody and he's counting lost votes against Nicole. And on top of that, like, he needs to be sure. If he's going to cut Cody, he needs to be sure he wins. And I don't think he can be sure. And I think that's where he's coming from if he's still planning to take Cody. Now, obviously, he's very incorrect, but I think that's his logic right now when he's thinking about it.
I think what's frustrating with that, though, is like Enzo saw how Nicole burned a massive bridge with Ian, how Nicole burned a massive bridge with Day. I feel like if I'm Enzo, I see Nicole as an attractive person to sit next to because, and she even chalks it up, and I think that's a specific move on her part, of how much she's burned the jury. So I get that reasoning, but I also feel like Enzo is shortcutting himself by not seeing what's right in front of him, and that's the fact that she has burned multiple jury members in the way that Cody's burned Kevin, but I can't say the other people that he's burned that Nicole didn't burn worse.
Yeah, I think part of it too, though, if I'm trying to get into this mentality as much as possible, is that Nicole has burned jury members in the past and still won. In particular, somebody that's actually on the jury right now, Davon. And so, like, the fact that she burned Davon before and still got her vote, like, okay, she burned Davon this time, probably still going to get Davon's vote this time. If anything, it makes it more likely that she's going to get Davon's vote. Is Enzo really going to think that he's going to get Ian's vote? He barely had a relationship with Ian. And Nicole's like best friends with Ian, and Ian, you know, he talked about being bitter, but he also talked about having a formula. That he was going to vote a certain way. So like, I can see that paranoia seeping in as a sort of rationalization for, I think, the truer motive, which is, I don't want to cut Cody. I don't want to betray my friend. And here are the reasons I'm able to create with that motivation.
And some people have gotten away with that. You know, I think that's what's funny about some of the more recent seasons, like Casey still won, Josh still won. So I wonder just sometimes how much like that, sometimes it's worked, right? Like sometimes some of these players have been able to have their cake and eat it too, make the wrong move. Ironically, one of the people who couldn't do that was Cody. But, you know, a lot of players have gotten away with that, you know, mistake of, you know, taking the wrong person.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you go back to season 16, Cody takes Derek. He loses massively. Big mistake. Yeah. Everyone's making fun of him. Season 17, Steve cuts Vanessa, wins the game. Fantastic. This is exactly what we wanted. And then season 18, we see Paul take Nicole. That was, he made a deal with Nicole and he ends up taking Nicole, which he sticks true to his word. He loses by one vote.
Yeah.
Tough, but he went with that one. He didn't take the obvious pick. And
that was sort of a weird one, right? Because it wasn't so much that she was his ride or die. It was more like he thought she deserved second more.
Exactly.
Right?
Like he didn't take the easy beat. And it was like, but nobody really made a big deal of that because everyone was just like, oh, but he should have won. When Cody took Derek, he shouldn't have won. He made the mistake. Derek was always supposed to have won in the first place. But people thought that Paul should have won. Nobody thought like, oh, you took Nicole. Nobody thought like you took Nicole over James. What are you thinking? They just thought, what was the jury thinking? So then in 19, Josh takes Paul, the person he's loyal to. And he wins. And then in season 20, Casey takes Tyler, the person she was loyal to.
Yeah, you also have Marissa and Ross in there too.
Marissa and Ross. Absolutely. Marissa takes Ross. Marissa wins. Casey takes Tyler. Casey wins. We see, even to some degree, we see Ricky in Celebrity 2. He takes Tamar, somebody that he was not loyal to. Somebody that he thought was the easier beat instead of his ally, and he loses unanimously. Then we see 21. And yes, 21, the jury was not quote unquote bitter, but in 21, what they did was the Jackson, he didn't cut Holly, he took Holly, he took the person he was loyal to, and he still won. So we have a long history of examples from the last 5 to 7 years, 5 to 6 years, take the person you're loyal to. That's the expected move. And more than half of the time it works out and you win. That's tough. That's tough to beat out of. Like it can't be understated that when everyone criticized Cody so much in season 16. He got so much backlash for taking, Dane took Anthony in Big Brother Canada. Absolutely. When Cody got criticized so much for taking Derek, the next two seasons we saw, John cuts Netta, Steve cuts Vanessa. They win. Like, this is the new direction. And then season 18 gets all muddy. We see, Big Brother Canada gets ridiculous for a little while, and then we see Big Brother 19, and this is, I think, really the start of it. Truly, Big Brother 19, Josh takes Paul, and everyone goes, "What an idiot! I can't believe this guy threw the game away. I can't believe this is happening. He's the next Cody. This is the worst. Oh my God, he won."
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And we've heard that argument used so much where it's like, oh, you can take the power player and like, but they play too hard. And that like hasn't happened that much. And it's like, it happened so much there with Paul and Josh in 19, you know? And I wonder if Enzo just feels like maybe he just thinks that he can do that. And that even though, as we talked about, Nicole seems to be the better person to take as far as who she's burned, maybe he just feels like he can get away with it. It'll be interesting to see, right? We always hope every time someone's been in this situation, like, you know, the whole Cody and Derek thing in the past, we've always been like, maybe they'll just realize in the final, you know, 20 seconds or whatever, and we'll see. Maybe it happens. They might not get the chance. It might be too late.
Yeah, I really want to keep hammering this home, because I do think it's important that, like, what is expected of you can make such a massive impact, that if the last two seasons somebody cut, if say Casey had won the game by cutting Tyler, or maybe Casey had lost the game by taking Tyler, and that's in the Casey lost the game because she took Tyler, and then, you know, maybe Holly beats Jackson or something, or maybe Holly wins the final three HOH and takes Jackson, which she would have. And then the narrative, instead of Jackson, whatever, is Holly lost the game by taking, you know, the problem is that she would have lost the game to Nicole as well, but
yeah,
you get what I'm saying.
Yeah, of course. Those if players the narrative aren't it either, right? It's like a weird thing where Cody is never like, it's interesting. These players that do make the mistake often then don't introduce into the conversation, "I blew it, man." You know, Cody has still said, like, you know, I had to make the move, you know, all this different stuff. That's my boy. Like, it's weird, right? It's like never been articulated as much.
And I think it is, it's what's expected of you. That if the last few seasons, the person cut the bigger player and they won, then that becomes what is expected. And it's a lot harder for players to do the loyal thing. The like, because right now that's the easy thing. That's what people have been doing for years. You take the person you're loyal to. But when the last few seasons, it's either you took the person you were loyal to and you lost and everyone's making fun of you, or you cut the person that you were loyal to and you won and everyone's like, "Great move." Like, that narrative is so strong that's like a huge extra layer on top of this incentive to be like, to be loyal or whatever. So I really do feel like that is a big part of this, Sharifa.
Hi, so my internet just decided to crap out on me.
No worries.
Back in the game, folks.
So that's where I feel Enzo is at. So that's why I want to start to look at it from Nicole's perspective now. Like, where do we think Nicole sees things? Is she taking Cody because she's just doesn't even care? She's not even counting jury votes. Or is she having a similar sort of calculation as Enzo? Like, is she thinking, okay, who do I have against Cody? Ian, hopefully. Kevin and Davon, hopefully, maybe. You know, she did last time, so she's got to be hoping. Danny should be, right? I mean, she was always closer to Danny, but she's probably not sure. I mean, she's definitely worried that Danny hates her, but she has to think, maybe I have Danny. And then, you know, then you have then you start to worry. But that's, you know, that's an okay start, I guess. Then you have Enzo. Who does she think she has sitting next to Enzo? Probably still Ian, probably still Davon. Why would Davon vote for Enzo over her? instead of Cody. Like, if she's going to vote for her over Cody, why'd she vote for Enzo over her? But maybe
does she think she has Faye's vote, though?
I haven't heard her talk about jury vote, so I have no idea, to be honest.
Interesting too with the Danny thing. It's like the same blind spot she had in the game. She feels like Danny is so much closer to her than Cody, and she probably thinks that Danny's like, well, she'll vote for me over Cody too, and Danny probably won't, based on the jury segment. Who knows what she does.
I feel like, Taryn, correct me if I'm wrong, but didn't she have conversations with Cody where she said to Cody that Danny is closer to you than she is to me?
Yes,
am I making that up in my head?
She has. That's kind of just how Nicole talks, if that makes sense. Like, she's very, like, she would never say, oh yeah, Danny's closer to me. You know what I mean? She's always right. Like, she's like, even before she believed, because at one point in time, she believed that Danny was closer to her than to Cody. But even at that point, she would have said, well, she's closer to you. But then she was actually convinced. And yeah. Then I think she actually believed it. And after Danny left, she was very, like, nervous. She was like, oh my God, Danny's going to hate me. I can't believe I believed in Christmas and not in Danny. But I really do think that her experience last time, where she kind of thought, like, I've burned a lot of votes, and then she got a lot of votes. Probably just kind of feels like, I just got to get there and then we'll see. Especially because she did go up against Paul. Like, she went up against Paul instead of James, and she beat Paul, and a lot of people didn't expect her to, and I think even she probably didn't really expect herself to a degree. And so I feel like it's probably not really part of Nicole's calculation, the jury votes. It wasn't in Big Brother 18. She sent Corey off with instructions for, like, this is what you should say to the jury, which is great. Jury management, love that. But I never really saw her, like, counting jury votes, like, this against this person. And I haven't really seen her doing it this time too. And maybe she will start to, now that they're kind of locked into the final three, but I don't know. I can't even, like, with Enzo, I can kind of see it. Like, I can kind of get into his head and go, okay, he might think that Nicole has these four, these five. With Nicole, I just don't see what votes she thinks Enzo is going to get that Cody doesn't, except for Kevin, you know? So, like, I'm not sure where that her head is at beyond just, I have to take him because I'm loyal.
I think part of it too is that, like, the structure of this game so far, which has completely benefited Cody, is that you've had this, like, nucleus of an alliance where, because it kept winning power, players were put in positions where they were no longer thinking selfishly. They were no longer thinking, what is my best path to the end? Instead, playing a little bit out of fear of, this alliance keeps winning power, so I need to prioritize this alliance so that this alliance prioritizes me. What happened, and what we saw happen with players like Tyler, is we get to the top six, and people are not, only a couple people within that are actually set up for positions of longevity, like Cody. And I think where Nicole is right now, and I think where Enzo is right now, is that they have been so wrapped up in this idea of playing the game with someone that I don't think they're actually thinking about, how do I play this game to win? I think they're thinking that they're doing that, but I don't think they're actually acknowledging that they don't have the moves to back up a winning game. And it's really fallen in line with how the season has come about.
Yeah.
That's a good point, because it's like, for in order for them to make this move that we want them to make to cut Cody, they almost have to admit to themselves that they haven't really played as well as they could have or should have. You know, like, they you almost have to have that moment. They have to be humble themselves and go, oh my God, like, I put myself in a position where if Cody wins this HOH, I played bad. And if they can do that, then they can make the right move if they have the power.
Yeah. I think it can't be understated just how much these things just add on to something that is already, it's a big hurdle to get over. Like, I think we, you know, from the outside, it's very easy to look at the position and say, cut Cody. That you cut Cody, you win the game. It's very easy to say that. But, like, when you're in there and you've been relying on this person for, 80 days, and they've had your back and you've had their back, and in a situation where everyone is attacking you and you've been clinging to this person and they've been your comfort and your safety, and they are looking at you with wide eyes like, we're going to make it to the end together. This is going to be our story. It's going to be so great. And like to just like lie to their face and to genuinely just be like, no, I'm about to completely stab you in the back and make everything we did completely irrelevant because you're not even going to make those chairs. Like, that's a hard thing to do. It really is. It's not easy. And so when you add on top of that these additional difficulties, you know, not wanting to admit that you've played a lesser game, like looking at like, well, it's not a guarantee that I'd win if I sat next to somebody else. Like, you add these things on top and it just layers the thing that you don't want to look at in the first place. And I think that's how you get there.
Well, it's an excellent point, because we as audience members are able to look at the game objectively because we have all the information in front of us. Whereas when you're a player in the game, the only thing you're able to see is what is in front of you. And it really comes down to you, like your deductive ability of if you can really lay out what the game actually is versus just your perspective of it. And so, yeah, I think you're completely right, because I don't think that they are looking at the game objectively from all angles, nor they might not have all the information that we have when we're making these judgments. And that's part of how that alliance was so successful, because they were preying on people's lack of ability to look out the entire game versus just looking at yourself.
Yeah. And it's real money. It's like, like it's there are big stakes. Like, you're not just talking about winning a game. You're talking about the difference between somebody making, you know, $50,000 or like, I don't know, like 20. I don't know what third place is now. But like, that's a big amount of money. And again, if you make a mistake, if you cut your friend and then also lose, now you've combined made significantly less money. And like, how do you ever live that down, you know, with that person? So it's like there are so many things that are pressing in on you. And I know, because I was always the person that said, like, look, I personally, I can't really, like, if I was in Cody's spot in Big Brother 16, I don't know if I would have done the same thing. I can understand where that comes from. Like, there is a sense of loyalty that you have with players, and the idea that you, like, it's easy to just stab them in the back is something that I think we really take for granted.
I think that was
a recent feed thing. Sorry.
I think that Cody would say, though, right, that the only thing worse than taking Derek to the end and losing would have been taking Victoria to the end, losing, and Derek go, bro, what did you do? You know, like, I'm sure that was almost a bigger fear for him, you know, and he made his choice.
And a real fear. I mean, look what happened in 19. Like, there are some, like, for all they know, the people in the jury are sitting there going, these two mother effers, we hate them both. We will literally give it to a bottle of ketchup if a bottle of ketchup makes it there. And Cody cutting Derek to take Victoria is like everything the jury wants, so that they can give it to one of the people that aren't the hitmen. And then now Cody is the biggest idiot ever. So it's like you can understand the sort of logical side of it, too. Right. So, you know, it is tough. It is tough. And I just want to like really make that clear, because over the next, you know, week and a half, I'm going to be saying, what idiots for not cutting Cody? but you know where I'm coming from.
I can relate only from like super micro instances, especially in Sequester, like looking at winners at Ward 2. Like, I went to DM with the one person who I knew could beat me, and it was out of loyalty. And it's when you're in those positions, it's really hard when you feel that half the reason you are there is because of this other player to make the move and cut them. So I do not fault either Enzo or Nicole for making the move to bring Cody to the final two. I think where my frustration is I just want to see them play selfishly. I want them to see them play their own game, because that's how Cody has played. It's one of the reasons he's dominated and he's done so well, is that he convinces as many people as he needs to do what benefits him. And there's rare moments in this game where a move happened that benefited someone else. And I think Nicole is that person who is able to make that happen. I think the Tyler move benefited her. It worked out, but I think that benefited her more than it benefited Cody. I think there was an instance with preventing getting Ian nominated where she was able to convince people. But for the most part, Cody has gotten everyone to do what Cody needs them to do. And I in this situation, when you have those personal feelings attached to it, and you have this person who's been dominating the conversation, I think it's almost made it impossible for them to think for themselves. But I do still feel like a little bit down, way down deep into the depths of our soul, if she has one, there is this inkling where Nicole might play this end game selfishly. I do think that there's a little kernel there because we've seen her do it a little bit. More so than we've seen it, though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Cody is in a weird way in a better spot because he has played more selfishly throughout the game, and he's played better throughout the game to set himself up in this position. That it's also, it's not only easier for him to make it in the first place because they're both going to take him, and he's going to obviously take himself. But it's easier emotionally in a way because he has to cut one of them. He's promised them both the world, which is very easy to do. There's no ramifications. Like, maybe he feels a little bit guilty in the moment, but he's just like, he can promise them both everything. And then, you know, he probably won't have to make a call. And if he ever does, like, well, I had to choose one. I had, like, sorry, I had to burn you. I'd promise something over here. Or sorry, I had to burn you because I'd promise something over here. And so, like, he's sort of put himself in a corner emotionally in a place where he is forced to make that call. And so even if he did have to choose one of them in particular, he's promised them both everything. So, you know, he's played the game with both of them for so long that whichever one he chooses, he's at least done the right thing with one of them. And he can feel good about that.
Well, he's played not an easy game. I don't want to dilute what you said, but it's easy to build relationships, to lie to people and to say, like, you're my number one. I am going to the end with you, and do that to multiple people. We saw that being Tyler's downfall in Big Brother 20. And I think Cody has more so limited. He has these two people and it is going to put him in a tough position. But I still feel like the person he votes out is probably still going to vote for him to win because both Enzo and Nicole have a stronger relationship with Cody than they do with each other.
Yeah, exactly. And that just really, it comes down to the relationships Cody has built, which is interesting because I was always, you know, I always used Cody and Derek as the example of you don't necessarily vote for the person you like more. You vote for the person you respect more, because Cody did have better relationships with many of the people on the Big Brother 16 jury. Not only that, but he had also won more competitions than Derek. Like, on paper, Cody is the easy winner over Derek, but they respected Derek so much. They respected who he was and what he did. And it was a landslide. And we all knew that it would be a landslide far in advance because of how much they respected Derek. And now Cody is in the position where he not only has those deep relationships with many of the people in the game and in the jury, but he also has that respect now that he is the guy that has been in charge of many of the decisions. He's been the person in the best spot throughout most of the game. And I think importantly as well, he is the one that has sort of, I really think that the, like, taking out Tyler, like what Enzo said about, like, that being a good, you know, thing on your resume. I really do feel like, well, especially watching the jury segment, that was the thing that, like, clinched it for the jury, that, like, he took out Tyler. Like, Tyler was, if you didn't want Cody to be running the game, Tyler was the person you go, well, maybe it's actually Tyler. Maybe Tyler has got this thing going on. But when you see Cody take Tyler out directly in the video, he wins the competition. He wins the competition. He sends Tyler home. You go, okay. I mean, what am I supposed to say now?
Yeah.
There is a final four veto too, right? I mean, here is with this. Wow, he'll send Christmas out of the game.
If he sits in that final two, there's no way he doesn't win it. Or if the jury somehow doesn't vote for him, then I don't know how they came to that conclusion, but, like, he's kind of dominated all facets of the game for this particular cast.
Yeah. I mean, he's now won 7 competitions. If he wins the final 8, or sorry, the final HOH, then he will have won 8 competitions. He will, I think, tie Paul for second most competition wins in a season, and be just behind Janelle with 9 in All Stars. And I think he will also be like in second place for percentage of competitions won, behind Janelle above Frank, I think. So like competitively, he has done extraordinarily well. I honestly feel like Cody is perhaps one of the better competitors in competitions that we've perhaps ever seen, especially with like the kinds of competitions we get nowadays. He's just so well rounded that socially, any competitions that require like social maneuvering, he's going to be decent there. And that's like probably his worst part because he's so threatening physically and like the way he looks. But physically, he's just so fit, and he can do really, really well with puzzles, with questions. He studies a lot. He knows the answers to things. Put him in any competition, and I'm like, yeah, I'd give the edge to Cody. And that's so huge in modern Big Brother. So that alone, definitely big. Socially, he's always been, I think, one of the better players, at least with the cast that he's been with. And then I think strategically is really where he stepped his game up this season. I've always been the person, and I've said this many times this season, that he really was with Derek on a lot of the decisions in 16. Derek led the way, but like he discussed things with Cody. They bounced ideas off of each other. Cody was never Cody's never the person that was like, all right, Cody, you do this. Let me think about it. I'll tell you what to do. It was very much a discussion, but it was clear that Derek knew what he was doing. And it's clear now that Cody had learned a lot from Derek, playing with him, probably talking with him, watching seasons. I did a series of off-season podcasts before the season started. One about alliance structure, one about winning the first HOH and the ways that you can like extract power from that. And it felt to me like he had listened to those podcasts, the way that he talked about things, the way that he set up his alliance structure. And I'm pretty sure Derek listened to those podcasts. So maybe maybe there's a little bit of transfer there. Yeah. But
just say it.
But there's obvious, like he obviously knows what he's doing. And even just after he won the veto, he was talking to the cameras, and he was saying, I really took a risk. I essentially threw that final four HOH to Enzo. But it was worth the risk. And I think what he was referencing was that what I was saying on the Thursday night podcast, which is that him and Enzo worked together to take out Christmas, knowing that that gives the edge to Enzo. He was willing to make sure Christmas lost rather than try to win himself in order to make sure that Christmas was eligible to go home this week so that he could get to the final three with Enzo and Nicole. Even though that left him vulnerable at four, he was willing to take that risk. And I wasn't sure if he was aware of the risk, that like that active risk that he was taking, but it was clear that he was like he knew what he was doing. He decided to take that risk. And it was an active choice that he made. And I feel better about that than I do that he just sort of like happened to win it for that. Like he actively went in knowing that he was going to do that. So, there's a lot to like about Cody's game, and listening to the jurors talk about him, it just seems clear that they see it too. I feel like this is the conversation that we will probably be having for the next couple of weeks, is like examining Cody's game and like, is this locked in at this point?
I think for me, where I have issue with Cody's game, I don't think this is going to affect the jury's vote. Cause everything you say rings true. I think my issue with Cody's game is I very much feel that he's played this game on like easy stuff compared to like the level of difficulty that other players have specifically had to deal with, especially marginalized players, especially players of color. And Cody was very much set up with relationships that, not when I say this, I don't mean the conspiracy theory of Derek setting up alliances. Tara's about to like light himself on fire.
That's
not what I'm talking about.
I don't think anybody with any credibility believes this.
But what I will say is that Cody being an attractive, cishet white man this really did help him out. And then it's a conversation people don't want to hear, but here's the truth of it. He was surrounded majoritively by other white men. He naturally worked with other white men. It gave him a step above a lot of the other players. So everything that you say is true. And I truly do believe that Cody is the most deserving of the players that are sitting left. My issue with crediting his game outside of this specific season is that I do feel that it was such an easy ride for him, and that all of his privilege really contributed to the fact that he was able to be so successful. Even just having the ability to be selfish, that is like, that is something that comes with privilege. My little trans Muslim ass coming in the house, I don't get to be selfish. I have to be smart. And I think with Cody, I applaud him for what he's been able to do with the resources that he's had. And I think that he absolutely is the most deserving person in the house. And we can go through, and there's some really brilliant stuff he did. I think the war between him and Tyler, that was the only time he really had adversity, and he was able to sort of topple Tyler over. But even in that regard, Tyler sort of like threw in the flag. So I don't know. I think the jury is absolutely going to see the game up front, and the game up front for them is going to be these competition wins and the players that he was able to get out and how he was able to set himself up and the relationships that he made. So if he loses, I would be shocked, but I will also hold my tongue before I say that he played a great game outside of this particular season.
And I feel like it's like we said about the competitions. It's like the structure of the game benefited certain people, like Cody already, right? These people who had this privilege. And then, you know, the competition wins just never went the way they needed to go to upset the balance and to try to break this sort of rigid structure that favors certain types of players and certain types of privileges. So that was really what I thought was really tough, is that not only is all that the way he goes in, he just never... And none of the game mechanics worked out the way we were hoping either.
Yeah.
Please go ahead.
Oh, I just want to say, in going off of that, what I don't want to do is discredit how brilliantly he played the game.
Oh, yeah. Because
it was masterful how he was able to network that and to massage it. But I also do want to acknowledge that the easy setting went on.
Yeah, I agree.
And I think it's worth acknowledging, because I think that, you know, perhaps if you're listening to this podcast, you've probably already seen some of the discussion that's probably already happening. And I imagine how most of the discussion will go is, you know, one extreme is going to say, Cody's an all-time great. He's amazing. How dare you discredit anything he's done? The other side will say, oh, but he has it on easy mode, and so his game is worth nothing. And that, like, those are going to be the two loudest arguments. But there's value to both, I think, that you can look at what he's done, which was amazing, and see, like, at the end of the day, you can only see what you saw, right? So anything else is just kind of like trying to extrapolate, and that's going to be a little bit less reliable than what you can actually physically see. But on the other hand, just because you can only see some things doesn't mean you can't extrapolate. Doesn't mean you can't try to dig a little deeper and try to, you know, look at other factors. And, you know, we talk about this a lot, especially toward the end of seasons, that luck is just such a huge part of the game. And one of the biggest pieces of luck, and maybe the biggest piece of luck that anybody experiences in the game, is you walk through the door and who are you looking at? Who are you playing with? That is like, that's the biggest factor that you will encounter in the game. And, you know, having a bunch of people that look like you, that are around the same age, that from the same areas, that have similar interests, like, that's just such a massive advantage to start with. Having a couple friends, super great. You know, stuff like that. Like, and those are things to consider. You know, unfortunately, we can't see Cody's game without some of those things. So, you know, I would personally say I'm not discrediting his game in any, you know, really valid way that is saying like because of these things his game is not worth anything, or I'm going to completely take away from it. But there are things to consider, especially when comparing his game to other games. When I look at somebody like Dan Gheesling, who has, you know, similar advantages in terms of his background and stuff like that, but who has experienced a lot more adversity in the game in terms of like competition outcomes and situations that he's been in, I still see Dan as a more well-rounded sort of like capable player to get out of certain situations. And then when you look at somebody like, say, Daniel Reyes, who goes in as a woman of color, and on a season where there were, I believe, two people of color total.
It was just her and Marcellus, right?
Yeah. And dominates a game so early, like, you know, and she made her mistakes, of course, but like those are things to consider when trying to judge the skill of a player, I think. Yeah. And it is not to say that, you know, Daniel Reyes by default then must be much greater than anybody else or vice versa. But there are things, you know, if we really care about like digging deep and like figuring out like, you know, what would Cody do in a season with a different cast? What would Cody do if Kacer had won that, you know, week four HOH? Like those are things to think about.
I think it's adversity for me. Like, I need to see Cody go through some sort of adversity. And yes, you can say that, like, well, he hasn't because he's played this particular game. But I do think that luck played a lot of the part of why he's received so little friction going against like his best
forward.
And for me, the only time we saw a little glimmer of adversity was way back pre-jury when there was sort of that war brewing between him and Tyler, and it was circulating on Danny's position in the game, and Cody was trying to protect Danny and Tyler was trying to get rid of Danny, and Tyler pretty much set up the cards to go in his favor. That was the one time we saw a bit of adversity, and if things had gone differently, Cody would have lost that round, but it didn't. So I think what I wanted to see Cody go through, and it's why I'm so critical of Boston Rob's game as well, is that how can this player handle themselves when they are facing adversity? What I do want to acknowledge is that Cody was not the only person who came into this game with this level of privilege, and he was able to outplay all of them. So I will never say that he is not a good player. You have to be able to say Cody is a good player. I just want to see how Cody plays when he has a little bit of adversity he has to overcome.
How much do you guys think that one of his best breaks was the whole Josh and KC not being in the game? I mean, I feel like, yeah. I mean, I guess it's outside of the game, but it was a great, great break for him right there at the beginning, right?
Well, the committee entirely would have shaped out so differently.
I mean, that's the whole butterfly effect, right?
Memphis and Christmas were the driving forces of the committee. And they, if I'm correct, and I think, please correct me if I'm wrong, they were the two spots that came in when Josh and Casey, if they were going to be in.
I think Keisha was the, right? I think Christmas was a lock. Christmas was in. I think, yeah.
They already had written all the Christmas jokes. All the Christmas puns were already written. They had
one person in casting was like, y'all listen, you know who would be gold on this season? Rise for the holiday, like, who got paid to make that decision? Yeah, I'm sorry, Taryn, I interrupted you. Please continue.
I believe Keisha was the other alternate that got the spot when Casey dropped.
Gotcha.
But yeah, I think if Casey and Josh are in, that means that Memphis and Keisha are out. And let's just say that Cody still wins the first HOH. That means that Cody is probably in with Tyler, Casey, although maybe he goes after Casey or Josh right away. Because he has to know that that's a big crew, but he wants to work with Tyler, so maybe. I don't know. I don't know what he does. We'd have to ask. Let's say he does. Let's say he still goes after, you know, Kacer or whatever, but then we've already gotten too far. Because Kacer wins the thing, and then there's no Keisha to go after.
No,
who does he go after? It's I don't know. Maybe it is Josh. I don't even know.
Well, his goals that first week was to make the least amount of a splash.
Exactly.
And just to set up relationships, which is smart. He played his first HOH pretty much perfectly how you should play a first HOH. He set up relationships. He didn't make too much of a splash. He put himself in a good position to make a lot of alliances later down the road. So I don't see him going after Josh if he sees that being a path of more resistance in terms of other players that he is trying to work with.
Yeah, I think the group is probably Tyler, Cody, Casey, Josh, Christmas. Because that foursome, Tyler, Josh, Casey, Christmas, is so, like, you can't beat them all at once, They exist. So Cody's obviously going to want to be in with them. They're going to want to be in with him because they don't want to be targeted week one. So that forms. Nicole's in there. Danny's probably still in there. Day and Bay are probably attached to Cody's side of things, not Casey's side of things, considering the relationship between Bailey and Casey. And then we probably see something somewhat similar, but with, you know, with people like Tyler having more power, people like Tyler, Casey, even Christmas, just having more backup, more weight in the game to swing around. And then we probably see maybe a similar boot order in the sense that, like, maybe I don't know, because maybe if Tyler has more sway, more pull, and he's more attached to people that aren't Cody, you know, maybe he is able to pull Kacer like he wanted to. And maybe Kacer and Janelle come in on the Tyler end of the power structure. And who knows where things go. Really, again, it, just these small changes could really have a massive impact on how things play out. And Cody definitely has a much harder hill to climb in that spot. Is he still capable of climbing that hill? Yeah, I think so. But it wouldn't have been as hard, and it would have been more fun to watch.
Yeah, I mean, we could talk for days about how the season would be different, even just with one casting change. But I think when I look at Cody's game, I see the moments where he got a little bit of a pushback. His reaction is to sort of like dominate the moment and to get things back on him. And I'm not saying that if he did face that adversity, say Josh's side is coming after him, that he wouldn't be able to survive it. Because if he's able to be as successful as he is with these resources, clearly he is a capable player. I want to see him go through the levels that other players who are labeled the greats have been tested.
And, you know, I think the closest we saw was that Tyler week, Enzo's HOH. And I do like how Cody handled it. That he saw what was happening, and what he did was he didn't freak out. You saw he wanted to, but even without Derek there to calm him down, he kept his cool. And he just kept trying with Enzo. Hey, but Tyler's kind of screwing us up, isn't he? Enzo was like, I don't really care. Like, okay. Yeah. And then he goes, okay, new tactic. I'm going to tell him about the committee. That really pays off down the line. But he just keeps his head down. He keeps working on it. And eventually he gets back. And part of that is Tyler screwing himself up, but you know, he could have freaked out. A lot of players would in his spot. He could have freaked out. He could have gone anti-Tyler. He could have blown up his own spot. He got caught from Danny. He managed to flip that back around. And he managed to keep steady and let the other person screw up. And then he was like, okay, solid. I don't think it was like, I'm not saying this is like masterful play. But he didn't screw up in a spot of adversity, which I think is a decent sign. It reminds me a lot of Derek, honestly, where I have a similar criticism of Derek's game, where he had a couple moments of like, ooh, this is a thing where he has to figure something out, and he did. But I was like, but what if it had gone just a little bit worse? Like, what would have happened then? Something that I've been thinking about lately is if Cody wins, dominates the season. Let's say never gets put on the block. He wins the final three HOH. Let's say he even wins unanimously.
Which is possible.
Definitely possible. Mm-hmm. Cody versus Derek. I mean, is that a conversation to be had now?
Here's what I will say in regards to that. Is that I felt this way back in Big Brother 16. I felt like Derek was given a lot of credit for what Derek and Cody did.
Mm-hmm.
I do think that Derek was a strategic force behind a lot of those decisions, but I don't think Derek would have been able to make a lot of the moves that he did without Cody's social capital. Cody was really great at building relationships, especially with the women. But he was really great at building relationships that alliance was then able to utilize in their game. So I do feel that Cody didn't get the credit he deserved from that final two. I don't know, Brendan. What do you think? Are you able to say one of them is better than the other?
Well, I think it's interesting. I mean, I think the point you make is really good. And it's interesting because following down along what you said is, you know, now we've seen Cody do it without him. And even if you want to say he's following the same blueprint as Derek, I think the podcast has said all the time that the strategic part of the game is easiest to learn. You know, if you have social and you have physical, you can learn the strategic part of the game. And yeah, it's interesting. It's tough, right? Because Derek will play again with the stigma of winning, which so we may never know how he could play. But yeah, I mean, now we've seen Cody do it without Derek. And we would have to see if Derek played again, would he need someone again to have that social capital, or would he be able to do it? So yeah, I mean, this is certainly a way of looking at it where Cody has a bit of an edge, honestly, now that Cody has more game tape.
It really tests the way that I look at things, because your first season's going to weigh a lot heavier to me, just flat out. I don't care if it's an all-star season. I don't care if it's a new player season. Just your first season is the most telling for me, because most people only play once. That's your only shot. You come back around a second time, you're playing a different game, honestly. It's not the same thing anymore. And so, you know, you can be great at all-star seasons, but you'll still lose every time as a first-time player. And most people only play once. So I really heavily weight the first game. And in the first game, Derek straight up beats Cody. Like head-to-head, beats him. He's obviously the better player in that spot. But second time around, Cody is playing against some tough competition. He has some advantages, sure. But he's playing against people who have played before. It's not like he's playing against new players. It's not like he's Paul, right? And he really just like straight up dominates this season. And it's like, well, Cody was obviously the lesser player in season 16. But what about Cody now? Like, what if I'm comparing Cody now? But then it's like, okay, but I have to wait the first season. It's a little hard for me. I'm honestly not entirely sure.
Even in this conversation, we relate a lot of Cody's success this season to strategies that Derek implemented and sort of like taught to Cody. And you also like
Derek's podcast. We don't know.
Or Derek's podcast. Who knows? But I think that sentiment of saying that a player's first season is really indicative of their skill. You know, if Derek was to come back and play a second season and not do as well, he is coming back with Taryn, I think we said this, but he's coming back with, or was it you, Brendan? He's coming back with
stigma. Yeah, that's what I was saying.
Being a winner.
Be able to see Derek, yeah, without.
And he is considered by a lot of people within the community as one of the best to ever play. Cody didn't come in with that. Cody came in as the guy who was so loyal that he went to the end with the person who was going to demolish him in the final two. Mm-hmm. So Cody didn't have, I think, the same pushback that Derek would have if Derek came back to play again. So that's another thing. But I also feel like it's unfair to be like, he's never going to be a better player when he has played a really good game this season.
Again, we may be jumping the gun, but like, what else are we going to talk about at this point? But I think this might be a conversation we're having for a while. I feel like this might be, the new sort of like, which one of them is better? And it's a weird situation, especially because they have played together and they played so closely together.
I feel like people are always going to lean towards Derek just because I think people respect Derek more.
That's true.
The truth of the matter is, and I will also say, like, blanket, y'all can come for me if you want, when it comes to considering Derek on like the lexicon of best players, he's not on my list. But we love, the game is subjective, everyone's allowed to their viewpoint. When it comes to the two of them, I do think that people respect Derek's game. They respect what he did. I mean, he really ran that season sort of with an iron fist. Whereas Cody, if we're talking about BB22, we also have to have the conversations of like his privilege coming into the game and how he was set up. Whereas Derek like came to the game with a bunch of people that he didn't know and like whipped out something pretty brilliant.
Yeah. Good points. Good points. All right.
Well, a little bit older as well, you know, like, and he, you know, he wasn't as old as, he wasn't a BB19 Kevin or Cliff or something like that, but he still was a little bit, you know, he had to adjust to the people he was playing, mm-hmm. which was a key part of his game.
Yeah.
Yeah. Now we are going to take a quick break for our sponsors, and we'll be right back.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
And we're back. So let's get back to the show. Well, one thing that might help us figure out these sorts of questions is the Legacy Watch. So let's get into, unless you guys had anything else that you wanted to bring up before we move on to the Legacy Watch. We can get into that. And I'm right now I'm looking for the results of when I actually included Derek in the list, in the layout.
We really, Derek's legacy should have been changing this whole season. He was
we didn't talk about Christmas at all. Poor girl. Actually, no, poor girl. She deserves this.
We'll talk about Christmas in the Legacy Watch, as this is really, this is her, likely her last week here. I mean, I can't remember which week it was that I did that. let me bring up the Legacy Watch here. If you're watching the video, you can see. Here we go. I have it up. Okay. All right. So let's get into the Legacy Watch this week. So last week on the Legacy Watch, previously on the Legacy Watch,
you have to do
what's
the British
going
version
on? This is nonsense. Oh my God. Somebody rigged it. Were we degraded? This is a bunch of clips that are happening right now.
Right. I thought you were gonna do the voice. Yeah.
Devon
was
or do the British version of the announcer being Rosa. My favorite thing.
All right. So last week it was Tyler's eviction week, and there was some theorizing, maybe by me or maybe not. I don't know. We'll see. That perhaps we had a little bit of an anomalous result because there were a lot of big changes, a lot of big shifts that happened in the Legacy Watch. And so this week, I think we're going to find out. We're going to see. Has it stuck or are things going to go back to the way they were? Let's see. Let's find out. Any predictions, Sharifa?
I don't know. I already see this, and like my soul is set on fire because I disagree with so many of these choices. Like, what? No.
Yes, to be clear, for those that maybe this is your first time listening, what I do is I poll the audience every Saturday morning. I tweet out a link to the survey. It's on at Armstrong Terran on Twitter, and you guys fill out the Legacy Watch. Not me. Don't blame me.
Looks like me and the audience need to have a little conversation, Sheena voice.
Darren does not endorse the views. Yeah.
I think
the views of the Legacy Watch are not Darren's.
I think what we could potentially see coming up is Cody creeping up to that top spot. I think the more dominating of a game he plays, I think the more credit that he's going to be given. So I could see Cody potentially shifting upwards.
Yeah, I think Cody will definitely end the season. We'll see if it happens this week, I guess. But I mean, you know, he'll wind up above Tyler, no doubt, I feel like. And that's looking at it now, you know, that's not the case.
I could also see Nicole shifting a bit upwards too, from Adi's point of view, just because of the fact that she is a winner who, well, at this point is guaranteed final three, potentially final two. So I could see her moving up a little bit. And I could also see Enzo moving down a little bit as well.
If Nicole or Enzo, obviously it won't be this week, but if Nicole or Enzo take Cody to the end and lose. I think that will affect their legacy a lot more than if Cody just kind of wins out. You know, if one of them actually makes that error, that will go a long way to their legacy.
Imagine making a Cody with Cody right there.
Yeah, you pull a Cody on Cody.
Cody. Yeah, that, I kind of want that to happen. That would be kind of like the end of Cody's Big Brother story, in full circle.
It really is a thing, too, where let's assume they go to the final three. Cody wins. He takes whoever. He wins the game. Like, Nicole and Enzo are seen a certain way through that. But then after the season, they genuinely, and they mean it, they say, if I had won, I was going to take Cody. And
they can just say that anyway.
And they say that, and let's say they mean it, too, and we believe them. We still see them a lot better than if they had actually done it.
Yeah.
Right? Which is just one of those things. That impact the legacy. All right.
I was always cutting them.
All right. Let's talk about David. Because, I mean, sorry, but just again, Nicole planned on doing that with Corey. And Corey, at the very least, had a very good chance of beating Nicole. Like, if Corey wins at the final four veto, like if things go the way Nicole wanted to in Big Brother 18 a little bit more, then she could already be one of these people. you know, what I mean? it's weird the way that we end up seeing things often. But anyway, I feel like people are more accurately judging Nicole's win because I felt like before they were not giving her enough credit. And I feel like people are coming around to her Big Brother 18 game, especially considering how well she's doing here. But we're not talking about Nicole yet. We're talking about David, who is still in the bottom tier, just by a hair. He cannot rise back out of the bottom tier. This makes me sad. I liked his appearance in the jury segment. You know, was he the best player? No. But was he was like a beacon of light on this season. I felt like he had the most positive attitude. He was the happiest to be there. And he was just like so excited to play. And like none of that showed in any of his game talk.
There were some good moves on his part. Like, his execution was poor and his ability to read the game was not always fantastic, but he did gauge that he was at the bottom. He did align with Day and Kevin, knowing that they were all at the bottom despite his history with Day. He did make the move to vote out Tyler. You know, there are some like kernels of like good game there with him. You gotta dig through a lot.
I think he had a lot of fun legacy moments. I mean, winning the competition in the dark was a really fun end, like with his story. I love
taking
that
$10,000 on the block. That's huge.
That was one of the great moments.
So memorable.
He's staying.
Yeah, exactly.
And not being believed by Devon and blowing up Tyler and Cody early on in the season. Like he was part of a lot of like big memorable moments this season. And like I really feel like he's going to be one of the people we remember from the season. They're like, oh, David, the rookie. He was on the guy that hadn't even played before was on an all-star season.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about like legacy in terms of like your just specifically your ability to play the game, am I going to think of David? No. But if we're talking about legacy just in terms of like the whole package, the player, the personality, like who's memorable, who am I going to think about? I'm not going to think about half these people who made it to the final five, final six. I'll probably think of David. Like he, whether you like them or you like to hate him, you liked to hate him. He was polarizing. People were upset. They're like, how they let this man? Oh, what is he doing? He was polarizing. And for me, that means a lot as a Big Brother player. I would rather watch that than a smart game player who's boring.
And I think he was polarizing in a fun way. He wasn't polarizing in a, some people thought he was like not a good person or not acting well. Right? And that's what we've seen so many times with some BB personalities where like they're polarizing for these reasons. Whereas, you know, David was a great guy. He was always likable. He was always fun to watch. And there were just game things that made him, you know, polarizing, you know?
Yeah. All right. Above David, we still have Nicole Anthony here, just clinging to the bottom of the low tier. What a way she has fallen since the start of the season here for Nicole Anthony. But it seems that here she will stay.
She kind of tanked her reputation in this all-star season. You know, I think she's a sweet girl. I think part of what made her so popular last season was that she was so many people's beacon of hope because there are just so many unlikable people that we wanted to see fail. And she was somehow like making her way against the odds to the end game. And that was so rootable. She was such an underdog. And she came back this time and she kind of took all the good favors she had built and she like poured gasoline and she lit it on fire. And I think that's sort of what she's remembered for. I think at this point, she's sort of known for like being really popular for a season and then coming back and people being like, oh, did I only connect with her because of the specific circumstance she was in and not necessarily because of the player that she is.
Yeah, I really feel like, honestly, Nicole's biggest mistake this season was agreeing to be on the season. She didn't have enough time to recover from the first time. And she also, like, this is, you know, I don't know, maybe I just feel like if you're not willing to pregame, you shouldn't play an All-Star season. You know, unless, you know, like, Sequester has dealt with this, but like, if you, unless there's like very enforceable ways to prevent pre-gaming, you should probably just, nah, I'm good. Cause like, and like somebody needed, she needed somebody to tell her that like, look, this happens. And if you don't pre-game, people are going to think that you're pre-game with people that are not you. And that's bad. And so like, look, I think Nicole, she could have said no here. She could have said, I'm sorry, it's just too soon. But please give me a call the next time. And they would have given her a call in a nice, cushy spot against new players. Yeah, she didn't have to do any pre-gaming.
Of protection or whatever.
Which would have been great for her.
Yep.
They would have loved her. They would have been like, I want to work with Nicole. Like a bunch of fans coming in who were rooting for her. She would have been in a good position.
Yeah.
Like Nicole, kind of like Nicole Frenzel who had it, you know, in the AG, you know.
100%.
Yeah. So there we go. There's Nicole. Above Nicole, we have Kevin Campbell still. Yes. He actually moved up a little bit. Nicole did well as well, just a tiny, tiny little bit. Moved a little bit up this week from last week where they had moved down a little bit. But here's Kevin. I think I would imagine actually Nicole. Nicole moved up like a small amount. Kevin moved up by like a full point, which is still a kind of small amount. But I have to imagine you saw him in the jury. Maybe you liked him this time in the jury. I don't claim to know the ways of the mysterious audience.
To see his position lights me on fire. I think Kevin is an extraordinary player. I think he probably came in with the most adversity. Coming into this game, the fact that he made it as far as he did with as much adversity he was facing, I think it's easy to be like, oh, Kevin's a complainer, he's a whiner. But like you heard that conversation about Kevin talking about his life, like what it means to be a biracial queer man, what he's gone through. I mean, this man was excommunicated by his family at a very young age. He has gone through a lot of lived experiences. And for me, he will always be iconic, especially when I think about his BB11 game, because it was the first time that me, a queer person of color, is getting to see a queer person of color succeed and make like really smart moves, almost win the game. He was one competition from winning the game. Julie said it herself in his exit interview. So for me, as a queer person of color, Kevin is a legend to me, and it pains me to see him this low.
Yeah, and this is something that I've talked about, that, you know, the thing I really like about Kevin as a player is that in his first season, and this comes back to what we've been talking about, we saw him in a situation that is hard to play in. He was on the outs in Big Brother 11 for most of the game, and he managed to survive and thrive and almost
never hit the
game.
Block.
Yeah. And then we saw him again in an even worse position this time. And he was not able to play himself out of that position this time, but he still survived for quite a while. And like he wasn't like a slouch in competitions. There was a world
who won veto to get himself off the block. You
know? Yeah. There was a world where he wins like one veto. And then the committee war starts and he becomes an asset to one side. Now all of a sudden he's playing Big Brother 11 again. And that's good. Like, so like knowing, seeing a player play in position, in a position like that, and be able to succeed to a degree, I think is a very valuable thing to see, because, okay, now, what happens if he's in a position of power in the game?
Yeah.
Like, he's a capable player on the outs. I wonder what he would do in a position of power. He'd probably be okay. And not necessarily. There are plenty of players that are really great when they're the underdog, and the second they get power, they lose it. And they do not know how to play. But still, I still feel like, I do think this is a low spot for, I've been saying that every week, but, I really do think as a player, he is now, it's funny because he was always like one of the underrated, like best never wins. And yeah. now I feel like he's an underrated, like, I don't know. He's underrated. Like he's been downgraded appropriately to a degree, but too much. So that's real.
Brett, were you going to say something?
No, I was just really just going to say, like, he still made jury. He still had these moments. He still had a passion for the game. I mean, he didn't improve upon his position, which would have been hard to do anyway. But yeah, I don't think this is quite a drop. I don't agree. Yeah.
And I think I think what we can look at when it comes to Kevin is that he did, yes, he had some incorrect reads, but I always felt like Kevin was putting on those incorrect reads specific to the person that he was talking to so that they would believe something that he needed them to believe. But when Kevin was with someone he trusted and he downloaded how he was perceiving the game, he was dead on a lot of the times. And I think that if Kevin was able to get, there were some conversations with Jay that were like completely like, girl, y'all are on the wrong track.
Yeah, I would say he was more accurate than Day was. But in terms of like players I've seen on the outs, I'd say like he had probably like a batting average, I'd say of like 400, right? Like, a little bit less than half of his, stuff. I think the biggest hit came right away when he was like the person convincing Nicole Anthony that Janelle and Kacer were against her. And that was like, ooh, this hurts.
And in terms of legacy watch, he may just not have quite been able to get back to that, you know, in terms of just why he is so low. I mean, if you take a low hit like that with the points, maybe he just was never quite able to accumulate in terms
of... But I will say that he did have a conversation with Day where he just laid out the game brilliantly. And I think the thing for me that I always pick up on is when he called Enzo a parrot. He was the only person who like called out Enzo's game for exactly what it was. And for me, that has to show his acumen as a player. I still think that he's one of the best to never win. And I will also admit that I am absolutely biased in how I see Kevin. But I really do believe that he's an extraordinary player. I don't think he really got to show it this season.
Well, the chat is informing me that a 400 batting average is Hall of Fame level. So
I didn't know what that meant. You said it. I was like, I guess that's bad. I don't know.
Baseball. I know.
I'm not so clueless that I don't know that 400 batting average isn't good. But I definitely shouldn't have used that. Definitely the wrong one. All right.
Flew over my head.
Above.
Yeah, that sounds really good.
Above Kevin is Bailey, who has dropped below Christmas. But hold on. Let me reload the page because it's literally by a hundredth of a point. Nope. Now it's 200ths of a point. Bailey had a big drop last week. She actually stayed the same this week. It was actually Christmas that moved up. That was what happened. Yeah.
And Emily, you talk first.
I feel like that's, you know, Christmas, that's got to be pre-DeVito. Like, I mean, as we said, there was this little moment this week where people felt like Christmas was going to be this amazing white hope that was going to come in and cut Cody and do all this different stuff. And I sort of feel like maybe now that we know that isn't the case, we'll see her slide back down below Bailey. But
I think this is a 1000% that like people were just like, she's going to win the veto and she's going to take out Cody. Please, please, please. I will say when I started the podcast, I was glancing at this. it was different. I think Christmas was, I think the later votes, Christmas has been dropping. So I don't expect this to stick, but Bailey actually moved up from last week just a little bit. It was mostly that Christmas moved up a bit more this week.
Y'all let me know when you want my TED Talk. It's ready.
Go for it.
Go for it.
All right, so here's what I'll say, and like Reddit, come for me. I am ready. Winter is coming. Bailey is a top tier player. Bailey is a top tier player. I think she is an extraordinary social player. And there's, when we look at her Big Brother 20 game, I think that's what was always her creme de la creme. She was really great at establishing social relationships. She could have played both sides in a really wonderful way and rid the middle. She won an HOH. The power got to her. Strategically, she wasn't able to execute what she needed to execute, and that ended up being her downfall. I think she came back this time, and I think she registered from the mistakes that she made and just her ability to connect with pretty much everyone in the house, even people that she didn't share commonality with. And the reason I'm going to say that Bailey's a top-tier player, despite the fact that her placements haven't been the best in the two seasons she's played, is I think if you place Bailey on a season that is actually diverse and inclusive, and Bailey is not surrounded by people where she has to build connections with, that she automatically has connections with, that players like Tyler come in with, that we would see her play a top-tier game because of her ability to build those social relationships. She does have a good strategic acumen. I think she's an extraordinary player. I know there's going to be a lot of bite back from me saying that, but I do. And I think if we actually put her in a place where she could thrive, she would. I mean, look at the challenge. She made it all the way to the end as a rookie. So that is the hill that I will die on. I will die on this hill. Come for me, please. I'm ready. But I truly do believe Bailey is an extraordinary player. And I think she's top tier.
I am a lot more inclined to agree with you than disagree with you personally. I was somebody that said this before the season started. I was like you guys are really low on Bailey. That she is like. I was on Twitch before the season started, and I was like, I think Ian, as much as I love Ian, not one of the better players on this cast. And people were like, even worse than Bailey. And I was like, easily worse than Bailey. Did you guys watch Big Brother 20 before everything went wrong? She was great socially. And then she came on the season and she was rising in the ranks. Yeah, she was rising in the ranks of the Legacy Watch. People were like, wow, Bailey's so good. And I was like, boom, I'm feeling so vindicated right now. And even when she was evicted, you know, just a few weeks ago, she was still up there. Let me try and pull up. Bailey in week 3, this is before she was evicted, was like solidly in the middle tier. And then I think she was rising. And then week 8, which is now, I think, after she was evicted, she was still in the middle tier. I think she had encroached the upper tier at one point in the season. And then she started to come back down. But I think what's happening is that, like, and I think it's what happened in Big Brother 20, is that people remember her for her downfalls more than they remember the game that she played. And I don't want to be cruel to Davon because I love Davon, but I really do feel like Davon did not help Bailey's game this season. And that if Davon was maybe not there, that I don't think she goes home in that spot.
She probably would have been in the committee.
She definitely would have been in the committee over Nicole's spot, I think. But Memphis wanted Bailey in the committee, and then he brought it to Danny, and Danny said, nope, can't bring Bailey in because of Davon. They're too tight. And so he was like, oh, okay. Who else then? The Nicole one, the little one, the blonde little one, the, you know, F. Franzel.
that was back in the Franzel days. It was.
Yeah. she would have been the committee. Like, her game is entirely different. And not only that, but she's in there with Tyler, who she has a history with. And for as much as they tried to work together, there was always that level of distrust of like, something gonna happen. And and I really do feel like she is so capable of playing so well. Now, if I am to criticize her game, I would say there are two major points from the season. I think one was, you know, her and Devon felt like they were in a good spot and said, hey, let's start throwing competitions. And at the time I was like, no, because the game is going to get away from you. And I feel like that's exactly what happened. And then two is that, I think that when she does get into like tricky spots, she doesn't handle the adversity super well. It's not something that I would like blame her for. I think she has a lot of reason to, you know, not handle that stuff, as well as some other people might, but it's definitely going to be a weakness in a game where, when you're doing this stuff, you know, we saw something similar on the challenge happen, that she, she's very good when things are going well. When something bad happens, it's like, I kind of think I can trust her to stay level. And so, that would be the, again, same could be true of Cody. Yeah. We just haven't seen things go that wrong for him. You know what I mean? So I agree. I think she could easily be a top tier player. I think we have seen from her a lot of promise. We just haven't really seen it play out. And that's why it sounds weird to say that you think that, but I can see why you think that. So there you go.
I appreciate that. I think for me, I'm always going to analyze this game from a socioeconomic lens and just knowing the adversity that she naturally has to face as a Black woman coming into this game, the stereotypes that were placed on her, that she just had to overcome a lot. And I truly do feel in my bones that if you were to place her on a cast that was diverse, that was inclusive, that she would be regarded as a top tier player. But we'll never know, will we?
Unfortunately not. All right. So obviously above Bailey, we have Christmas. Again, I personally do not expect this to last. As of right now, it's still, it's literally 0.02 of a point of a difference. And oh, there we go. Look at that. I refreshed the page and they swapped again.
I'll take that for tonight. That's a win.
The Christmas miracle is over.
Did you plan that one coming into here?
No, I was just referencing what I said before, and that, you know, you moved up because everyone was, you know, hoping and hoping and hoping.
Yes.
And for that miracle where Christmas somehow was the savior.
So I will say this about Christmas, since this is likely the, you know, her last week in the game. I do feel like Christmas, to a degree, has proved herself as a player more than she had, more than she was seen. Right. You start the season, you saw her as the person who literally gave up a win in the final three, who was literally carried, like wheeled around, carried on Big Brother 19. And I think she comes onto this season and she does have some strategic chops. She does have her own kind of social chops. To a degree, she won less HOHs this season than she did her previous season, but that's fine. She won more competitions overall. So, you know, you can see like there's a player here. She's not like a Victoria. She's not like just like completely not even in the game. But is Christmas really gonna win? Like, is she ever gonna really gonna win? Like, nobody respects her. And even in a season where, like, this is the season, if there's any season that might respect Christmas, it's a season like this, where, like, she got really far in a big alliance, and all she needed to do is, like, win a couple comps. She takes out Cody. Let's say she had won this veto, she takes out Cody. Is it possible that she could win? Yes. But even if she takes out Cody, I still would have given major odds to her opponent in the final two. That's how bad she is at being respected. So like it's hard to judge a player like that, because when you're not respected and people don't see you as a threat, that is going to set the dial to like super easy in the game. People want you around because you're such a layup. And so like that's going to impact how you see Christmas. And at the end of the day, for as much as I think she has proven that she's like not just a nothing player, I think she hasn't really proven that she's worth more than, you know, just whatever's there in the game, unfortunately. And I think that this is, I think low tier is very appropriate for Christmas.
I completely agree with the audience here. Like I'm talking about the wrestling. I agree with this placement. I think what is interesting about Christmas and what you absolutely touched on is the fact that Christmas has made it to Final Four twice. Like, there are not a lot of players who are able to say that. But even with that, we still question her game and, like, part of the reason why she was able to make it far. And, like, socially, at the beginning, she was doing quite well. She built a lot of relationships. She had a lot of avenues. But she didn't know how to balance those relationships. She didn't know how to handle those relationships. And then she ended up burning bridges when she didn't need to. She didn't have the, like, strategic ability to acknowledge that, hey, I am in a position where I can sort of like float my way from here and there to get myself to the end. Instead, she nominated Bede. She nominated people who are never coming after her. And that was the point where she became a really big target and started to aggravate a lot of people and has made it to this position because of the fact that people see her as a layup. She has to have some sort of skill and ability to be able to make it far twice. I absolutely give that to her, but I agree with your assessment pretty on the nose.
Yeah, this might sound weird, but try this. We did an emotional intelligence podcast. We talked about, you know, like, so self-awareness is one of those things. I think she's smart. I think she's a smart person. I think she's an intelligent person, but she has a severe lack of self-awareness. And that makes her like very bad socially. Like, she can't really fully tell when people don't want her around. She doesn't really know like how she's coming across sometimes, but she's smart enough to like be able to like work around that, and she's smart enough to have been able to recognize sometimes that she is like that, but she's not self-aware enough to actually fix it. But she's intelligent enough to see it and try to like do it's hard to describe a little bit here, but like I think that she's able to work around that lack of self-awareness just by sort of analyzing it. She talks about she's seen a therapist a lot, and they've helped her see you know, different aspects of herself. She talks about the problems that she has with that sort of thing, but she's unable to fully like in her own head fix it without like standing on the outside, and so she gets very lost in that, you know, sort of lack of self-awareness mode, and then she'll like see it and be like, ah, damn it, and then she'll get upset about it because she can't fix it, and she keeps happening. I think that's sort of like the cycle of Christmas in the game, and it's why she's so hard to pin down sometimes, is because like there is something there, but there's a severe lack of something there as well. I don't know if you say lack, but like something that's just like that's not where she wants it to be. On the other, it's an imbalance, I think, is the right way to say it. I feel like that's when I'm thinking about Christmas as a player, that's kind of how I see it.
I think you're right. I think she has the tools. I really do. Like, I think she has the tools. We've seen her these two seasons do well. We've seen her be able to make social relationships. We see her, I don't know if I want to say win competitions, but we've seen her empower positions. I think she has all the tools to make a great player. And I think she lacks the self-awareness to be able to utilize those tools.
Yeah.
She somehow won that that foot race again. It's still
got it.
About somehow winning it, still by everyone defaulting. I don't know what that magic is.
God.
All right. Above Bailey now is Keisha in the middle tier. Still, Keisha's been like locked in for a long time. She's just hanging out in like the same spot all season long.
Being on this season can also be good for one's legacy.
You know, unfortunately, yeah, not. You know, I really,
now is that a,
I yeah. really thought like, so Keisha started, she started in the upper tier, strongly in the upper tier. She gets voted out. and she drops down immediately to the middle tier in the spot she's at, and she's just stayed there all season. Like, there was no bounce back. We've talked about it a little bit, but I think part of it is that, like, in the preseason, people who didn't see season 10 didn't vote. They chose, you know, NA. And then they saw her in this season, and then all of those people voted. And so that sort of, like, balanced it out, and now she's kind of stuck there. So, unfortunately, this is, I think, where a lot of fans will see her, just her most modern appearance, and I think maybe many of them wouldn't have even seen season 10, or maybe they just don't really, like, when they think of season 10, they think of, like, the Renegades or even Rennie, and they don't think quite as much of Keisha. But
yeah, it's hard for players who were iconic on their first season in any of these shows who come back and just kind of go out early, and even if it's not terrible, it's just when they go out early, it just feels like that is what happens. They just kind of go a little down, and it's a weird thing, because, you know,
it's kind of what happened to Allison from season 4, that you and a lot of people still think of Allison as like, oh, Allison, but I think before the original All-Stars, Allison was one of those, like, ooh, like, she was like a Russell Hans, she was like a best to never win, like, she came close, like, she's a super manipulator, and then she came on season 7 and it went out really early, and people still remember Allie. They remember, like, but it's mostly like the fans that remember Allison. Yeah. And she's not like a figure in the you know, not that Keisha was huge in the major fan base to begin with, but
see these players, you know, in both Survivor, Big Brother, that, like, sometimes if they just come back on that second season, and maybe the advantage was that they didn't do as well in the first season, if they really just become so successful on that second season, it can just reframe everything, you know, and they just wind up, you know, like a Boston Rob, you know, who wasn't that great on his first try in terms of placement, and, you know, it's all that second time that really inflates him over other people.
Yeah.
I think Keisha was in a similar position with Kevin in terms of just, like, not being super well known coming back, unless you're a Big Brother super fan, then you know exactly who Keisha is. I agree with that. I think what's something that should be said about Keisha is that she is such a, like, firecracker. And I think it was sort of a shame to not see that this time around, and you're like, oh, I guess she kind of lost it. Then you see her on Twitter and she is snapping off. She's making very bold statements.
That's still not her, right? That's still, like,
is that not? Have I been duped?
See, I've heard that a bunch of times in the podcast. Does that confirm that's not her?
I don't know. Her, right? It was definitely not her at one time. I don't know if she's taken over, but I think from what I've heard, like, her friend is still running Twitter and she's on Instagram. I think that's what I've heard.
I need the investigators
to get out and just see all her Twitter and just be like, whoa.
I see her tweets all the time.
I think it, like, has the stamp of approval. This is, like, literally, I think I read a Reddit comment like 3 weeks ago. So this is like zero credibility. But I think what I've seen people say is that perhaps she got out and she was like, people liked her Twitter account. And she's like, yeah, just keep doing it. I'm not like a Twitter person. And so she just let her friend keep doing it.
So maybe she's not a firecracker anymore. Who knows the real tea besides God? But I think we all wanted to see that firecracker come back, and she sort of just was, you know, just didn't really do thing either way. Just sort of was very, like, complacent. The 1 week she was there, she wasn't exactly memorable for the 1 week she was back. So I think it definitely, like, I don't think it hurt her reputation, but I don't think it introduced her to a contemporary Big Brother audience in a way that she potentially couldn't.
Yeah. All right. Above Keisha is Davon, still here in the middle tier. So last week, Davon dropped a couple of points. This week, she came back up like 1 point. So, like, basically, so far, what we've seen is that last week's drops are mostly still in effect. They bounced back a little bit, but not all the way. It really seems to have a little bit stuck, at least, that a lot of this movement is mostly sticking. It's basically like they drop 2 points, they come back up one. So there seems to be some kind of, again, I have no idea what happened last week to cause all the shifting, but so far it seems to have stuck. And here's Devon here in a high position here in the middle tier. She could, I mean, I still feel like she's just like, she's one really good jury segment away from hitting back up into that upper tier. She's very close points wise. So it's possible.
If we're talking about like skills as a player, or we're just talking about like the player in their entirety, I think that Day is just someone who's so memorable. Like, she's entertainment. You remember her when she's on your screen. It always shocks me that she's not as popular as you think she would be for how much gold she gives the Big Brother community. Her gameplay, I think, has positives and negatives. I think gameplay-wise, I think this is the appropriate placement. I think she's sort of a middle-tier competitor. She has really great strengths. She has a lot of detriments. Is she the most well-rounded player? I don't know. But if we're just talking like player and whole, like their memorability, how entertaining they are, entertainment-wise, she skyrockets. Like,
how many gifts they create.
This was the one week she won veto. Like, that was like the one week of game that we really had this entire season. Right. So, and she knew, she was like, I know the right move is to use this veto. The fans are going to look at me and they're going to be like, girl, why didn't you? And whether that affected her longevity, who knows? I think her longevity wasn't great no matter what she did.
Day was so fun to root for this year. And it was great. I think as far as, it's so tough for Day that right near the end there, she had that unfortunate thing with David where she got duped. And I just feel like that was too bad because that was such a tough situation all around in terms of, because it was like, you're rooting for Dave Bond and they're like, Day, no, it's like the horror film, right? It's like, stay away.
Even in that situation, I blame Nicole more than others.
Yeah.
I mean, I think that part of this is that because people like Devon so much, they get very frustrated, like especially frustrated with her gameplay, especially because it's like the way that she talks about the game, she loves it. She comes at it from an analytical perspective and it's like you think that there's something there. And then when she disappoints you, it's like, it's like even more disappointing because you expected so much more. But I mean, I talk about this every week, but like legacy wise, there's something undeniable about the fact that she's been on three seasons and she's been a main character all three times. She was out second in Big Brother 17 and she was one of the most memorable characters from that season.
And brought back being a second boob,
Brought back because of that. Big Brother 18. Like when you think of Big Brother 18, you think of Nicole, Paul, Devon, Paulie, maybe like Devon's up there. When you think of Big Brother 22, I think you're going to think of like Cody, Nicole, and Devon is going to be up there. Like, Devon is going to be one of the big people you remember. I really believe that. And she's such a big presence in the jury. And I think that's going to be part of it too.
BB Legends. I mean, if they did BB Legends, I don't think anyone would bat an eye to see her right there. I mean, she's made that kind of impact on the game as far as her iconic status as a character, for sure.
Amount of impact for the amount that she's physically done. Like, I mean, you said it yourself. She was on there for a week or 2 weeks. She comes back for another season. She's one of the biggest characters of that entire season. She takes a little and she just gives you gold.
Yeah. All right. Above Devon, we have Danny. Still in the upper tier, just by a hair. She's managed to squeeze her way back into that upper tier. This is interesting to me. Danny, started the season in third place, one of the most popular players. In fact, she was the most popular player coming into the season. She was at the top of the list in terms of pop and favorite players. Legacy, she was in third. And over the course of the season, she just slowly dropped further and further and further until she landed in the middle tier. And then after being evicted, she actually rose back up just by a hair into the upper tier here, Brendan.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it, when you look at the people ahead of her, I mean, I think, you know, I just feel like she's one of these people that we talk about, people like, you know, Memphis last week, like he had a chance, he could have won the game if a couple of things that went differently and things. And she's just one of these players that really seemed to put herself in a position where there was just no daylight. So if you're purely looking at the BB22 game, you know, I definitely think she's, I don't think she should necessarily be higher than anybody else. I mean, I think this, if we're talking, like we said, if we're talking legacy, if we're talking iconic status, I do feel like someone like Day has sort of like, you know, done more for their legacy, certainly this season than Danny has. But, you know, she was a big part of the season. I mean, in terms of the way that, you know, she was on the screen and stuff. But I just, I don't know. I definitely don't think she should be any higher. And maybe you could put Day above.
Let me say this. I think that Danny saved what remained of her legacy by winning that wall comp. That if she goes out that week, which if, you know, if Tyler had won it, or if many other people had won it, she would have gone home that week. I think that she would have been, you know, out as the first juror, hadn't won a single competition all season. And that would have been it. And she, more importantly, she would have been part of the power structure dying. But by winning that competition, we got to see a little bit of like, ooh, Danny won a competition. She was very messy during the HOH reign. People didn't like what she did, but it was very messy. It caused some entertainment. And then by the time she eventually is evicted, she's actually one of the more fiery people left in the game. And we, you kind of wanted to see more from her. And so instead of like, instead of being excited, like, ooh, the power structure is being broken up, you're like, oh no, I kind of wanted to see what she was going to say. And so I think she comes out with just like, she just manages to like change the taste in your mouth of Danny right before she leaves. And I think that really helped, helped her cling in here into the upper tier.
I think Danny is going to be remembered from the season for doing like the reverse quote unquote mistake from her first season.
Right.
That she was so scared to end up with the same result that she ended up, I think she made like one placement better than she did previously. But what was the case is she was so iconic on Big Brother 13 because she made those decisions that people, including myself, still have that like hope for her and love for her as like a player, as a person, for her skill, for her personality, that we wanted to see her do well. We wanted to see her succeed. And she kind of continuously was putting herself in not the greatest position. But I would say after the season, I think this is a good placement for her because, you know, she could have dropped further. And this is, I think the drop is deserved, but I don't, I still think she's an upper tier player. So I'm good with this placement for her.
Mm-hmm. All right. Above Danny is Enzo, who has fallen below Ian and Memphis.
Interesting. Oh
yes, quite the fall from grace for Enzo, who has just been
the audience one too many times. Yes. Like
Enzo, I mean, Enzo made the top tier. Enzo was a top tier player. I think it was just a couple of weeks ago. Let me see. I think it was week 7 that Enzo was in the top tier. Let me just pull this up. Yes, week 7. This is week 10. So 3 weeks ago, Enzo was a top tier player. He was in the top. He was fourth place overall behind Janelle Kacer and Tyler in the top tier. And since then, he has dropped all the way down below Cody, Nicole, Ian, and Memphis. And now he's starting to cling to life here in the upper tier. It is a fall from grace here for Enzo. That triple eviction was not a good look.
I mean, even when you look online right now, he's sort of become the poster child for what was wrong with the season, right? Like I talk about legacy, it just feels like when you're looking online and Twitter and all this stuff, the frustration with players who won't make a move, it started to sort of localize around Enzo. He feels like he's become that person right now.
I think what is unfortunate is I don't think that Enzo's game has really been able to be displayed the way that he played it. I think that Enzo played a brilliant floater game this season. The issue was he didn't need to be a floater because one side just consistently dominated. So I don't think we got, it's not the issue. I just don't think we got to see the complexity of his game. He was fantastic at being good with literally everyone. He was never really a target. Strategically, we didn't get to see him being the active force in making a move. He was a lot more passive. He always ensured that he was protected. I think that from this season, what I'm going to remember him is his ability to be a fantastic social player. I think the frustration that people are having right now with him, and Brendan already touched on this, is the fact that he just he hasn't made moves. He hasn't showed strategic ability. He hasn't physically done something that is deserving of winning. But there's no move you can say he made, but you can talk about his social capability. I don't know how I feel on this place. And how do you feel, Tara?
Well, I mean, I will say this. Enzo in the preseason was fourth to last. He was below Nicole Anthony. So he's gone up quite a bit over the course of the season. It might be a fall from grace in terms of a few weeks ago, but many weeks before that, it was a steady rise to glory. So there is something to be said about that. I think also, I think that, he very recently just accomplished the goal of never being nominated all season. There are very few people that have that on their resume. That, I think, is gonna help him. I also think that whether he makes the final two will be important. I think because people expect Cody to beat both Nicole and Enzo, normally I would say in legacy wise, I would take third over second, because most people will be like, well, if you lose the jury vote, then you were never going to win. But third place, they're the fallen angel. But in this case, I actually feel like getting cut in third place is the worst position, because you both lose to Cody anyway. So making second, I think, is actually better for his legacy. He improves his placement on the previous game, and it's like this guy clearly does something right. He just has a little bit of something that he needs more, and that's a much better position than many people are in, right? So I think he's gonna stay upper tier no matter what happens this season, but I don't think he's gonna make top tier again unless he just cuts Cody and wins this thing. And yeah, I think upper tier is appropriate.
No, for sure. He's playing, it's Truth said, it's one of those things where he played such a great floater game, but when the game hasn't been so volatile, that's the thing we've been saying the whole time, that kind of game just looks less impressive, right? It's not to drive all the way through the metaphor, but when the seas are rockier, it's more impressive when you stay afloat. If you're just sort of floating through something that's very easy, it's just going to look a lot more unimpressive. Even though he's prepared for more, right?
Yeah, and I think to go off points I've already made, I think if the way he wins this game is by taking out Cody, I think that's how, if he is able to sort of have this relationship with Cody pretty much from jump, use Cody and then actively remove Cody, I think that for me is very impressive. I can validate that sort of game structure. Because what I do want to value with Enzo is I feel Enzo, of most of the players, we're coming in with privilege. If you were to put him on a season that is diverse, I see Enzo making the same placement that he's making now. He was able to connect with everyone. Yeah. And that is impressive to me, in a way that I didn't value his game from BB12, mostly because I just didn't remember it as much. But I remember him now, at the very least, as a very strong social player in a way that I didn't when we left.
All right, so that means
Cody saying, "I'm not going to pull a U, Cody." I'm getting, then he's going to go way up.
I caught it.
He's "Yo, Cody, I'm not pulling a U." That would be amazing.
Brilliant! come on, entertainment! It would be such a great way to finish a season that has been so sad.
I do, Tammy in the chat says Enzo told Cody too much information, and I do have to wonder. What would this game have been if Enzo had kept the wise guys to himself? If Enzo hadn't told Cody about the second wise guys, about 2.0, the one with Christmas, where does that leave Enzo? Because if Cody doesn't know about that in the final five, then Cody is a lot more willing to keep Memphis over Christmas. Memphis is here in the final four. He still probably wins HOH. He's still probably making the final three. But now he's in a spot where Memphis might win and take out Cody, or worst case, Memphis wins, takes out Nicole instead of Cody. He takes Cody to the final. That's actually great for Enzo. Now Memphis and Cody in the final two, in the final three. That's a better spot for Enzo. Worst case is, neither that happens. They just take out Memphis at the final four and he goes to the final three with those two anyway. But like, I just feel like he's got a little bit of a better spot there, right? With Memphis in the game. He has a little more agency. That one small thing could have been a difference here. The more I talk it out though, the more I'm probably going to watch this veto episode and see that literally no one would have beaten Cody and it would have just played out the same way. But you know,
well, I think what we needed to see and everything you're speaking to is like, I think what Enzo should have done is start to dismantle Cody's resources, not necessarily take the shot at Cody yet, because it did benefit him to keep Cody in the game because Cody was so loyal to Enzo and has been protecting Enzo. But I think it's why the move to save Nicole struck so many people the wrong way, because that was such a brilliant opportunity to start removing some of Cody's resources so that you guarantee in that end game that like the second he makes a slip that he's going home. But because he didn't, Cody is way too protected going into this end game, and Enzo hasn't really made the physical moves that he needs to in order to win. That's how I see it.
Yeah,
and the move where he takes out Nicole and then jumps back, I mean, that would have been the game that really would have been dynamic, right? Where he's sort of like able to, you know, go back and forth.
Mm-hmm. And he could have.
Yeah, well, so obviously above Enzo, we have Memphis, who left the game this week. He did see a drop from last week, but it was a fairly minimal one. Just about one point or so. So nothing too major. He was neck and neck with Ian. He, with this drop, is now a couple points below Ian, and is likely going to stay there as we see the rest of the season play out. Legacy wise, I think that's fair. I think Ian does have a stronger legacy than Memphis. As players, I think Memphis is obviously a stronger player. At least that's how I feel. But legacy wise, I think this is the right one. I think this is the right call. I think that Ian is just the better renegade. Has the better renegade legacy. I mean, he has a win under his belt alone. That's gonna be big. But overall, I think Memphis has done well for himself this season in terms of legacy. He came in the upper tier, and then he is leaving just a couple points higher in the upper tier. So I think that's about what happened, honestly.
Yeah.
I think people were like, this guy's a jerk. We didn't know how much of a jerk he was, but like, he knows how to play the game. We weren't sure about that either.
Yeah, here's my only issue with Memphis being this high, because I think game-wise, I agree with this. I think Memphis played one of the better games for the season, and shockingly so. Mm-hmm. I did not see it coming, because he was such an old grandpa. But you can't deny it. He, like, it was very by the book. It was, you know, very, like, logical. There wasn't any, like, anything innovative about it, but it was successful. I applaud him for his game. I think he did play a good game. I think for me, he's never, maybe I'm different because I wouldn't have put him upper tier for me to game. He was never really memorable for me. The thing I remember about Memphis is he's the first person to lose unanimously in a final two. Mm-hmm. That's what I remember about Memphis. So I think game-wise, this makes sense to me. I think two seasons from now, no one's going to be talking about Memphis.
Yeah, the great thing for Memphis is just that he's one of these people that it kind of surprised me too as I was watching and, you know, listening to the podcast the last few weeks, that he's one of these people that kind of could have won. Like, there is actually like a path.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of what happened here right at the end, is not only could he have won, I mean, Christmas wins that competition where she loses that small pumpkin, I mean, he could have actually won. And like we were talking about with people like Enzo and Nicole and Christmas, like, could they have actually won? And I think that's where his legacy was held. You know, it's just that he was one of these people that he might have actually been able to win, which we aren't sure we can say for many other people.
Yeah, I mean, he was definitely one of the best players this season, and he's not going to be remembered for it. I agree. I think, I mean, even like the jury segments we're getting, even the way that we were talking about the finals, like, he is kind of like, he was the final boss for Cody. But we're not going to remember him. He's not a memorable final. It was not a big fight. It was like, okay, now we're approaching the final boss. It's Memphis. And oh, Nicole just beat him. He's done. That's it.
Yeah. But if it had happened here in the final four, Vito, or in the final three, then it maybe could have been a more iconic part of the season. You know, like Memphis Cody. But
he just needed one win.
One win
in the final five. Yeah. That's it. He cements himself, I think, as like, end game, underdog, Memphis. Ooh. Instead, it was like Christmas was in that spot, but nobody really wanted her to be in that spot. And then she just lost the first time she needed to win. And so, like, nobody got a win when they needed the win. And that's what people look for. So, like, even if Christmas had won in the final six or the final five, it wouldn't have mattered because she didn't need to win. But if Tyler had won, if Memphis had won, or even if Christmas had won here, like, I think they would have received a huge boost. Because winning endgame comps gives you a huge, I mean, I think we saw that with Nicole last week, in the Stockwatch at the very least, that, like, she wins a couple competitions in the endgame. It's like, ooh, Nicole. And now it's like, oh yeah, Nicole, did we overreact a little bit? I don't know. That's where Memphis is going to fall overall. I think it's pretty appropriate. I think basically, I always saw him as a very capable player. A lot of people remembered him as maybe a Dan Lackey. And I always kind of saw it as, no, he's a good player, but he just got really outmaneuvered by Dan, which who wouldn't? He comes back on the season in a spot where he's a bit older and he's much less connected than most of the people here. He's an alternate, and he still does well. And I think it really confirms that, like, yeah, he's a capable player, not without his flaws, as a player, but, you know, I think it's more confirmation than anything else. And I think that's why he's not really moving too far. So above Memphis, we have Ian, who is going to sit there in the upper tier. He did drop from the preseason, obviously, as, you know, Ian was like Ian. Now I feel like it's, yeah, Ian. Which, honestly, again, I kind of expected this season. I feel like people still love Ian. That they were especially like first half of the season, Ian. People are like, yes, love Ian. He's a great guy. Always catching on to the power structure. And then it was like, ooh, now he's retreating back. Oh, now he's like, being a little weird, in this final week here. But now he's in the jury house and he's acting fun again. And I think overall the level of like, people like Ian, but I think a lot of people have like opened their eyes to like gameplay wise. It's not quite there, but he's still Ian. Still beat Dan.
Yeah. I think people wanted to see Ian come in and just like show why he won BB14, because there was always a little bit of like, oh, well, he won because people didn't want to see Dan be a two-time winner. But I think there was still respect for him. And he came back and we didn't really get to see that. I always saw people really attributing a lot of success to Ian in this game, and I never really saw it. I think that this is the best outcome for him. For me, I think his legacy is a bit, and I don't want to sound harsh, but I think his legacy is a little bit tarnished from this season, because it was always a like, well, maybe he's one of the greats and we just didn't see it. Mm-hmm. And then he came back this season and it wasn't there.
And he basically went out in the spot he would have gone out in 14 if he hadn't started going on a comp run.
Yeah, he sort of like tried to just replicate it, and I feel like he didn't set himself up well at all. But yeah, if that, you know, he got a little bit unlucky with some of those powers, so it's weird with Ian, because like there was a world where like he could have made it through that week, and like who knows, I mean, I just, you know, he just didn't set himself up well he put so much of it in the hands of luck, you know, like he really put himself in a position where he could have gone further into the game, but he did nothing to ensure that he was going to do that. You know, he was completely at the mercy of other players.
And also his reads were just completely off.
Yeah. And when I say he caught onto the power structure, like he was told the power.
It was gifted to him. Like it was given to him that the one time he was starting to catch on. And yeah, like he was always wanting to trust Nicole and Cody, and that alliance he had with Danny just wasn't really able to see the game as it was actually unfolding. And it's why he ended up in that position. I think for me, it's why I'm going to hold Kevin in a little bit of a higher regard, because yes, there are moments that Kevin had bad reads, but there were moments that Kevin's reads were pretty on the nose. Yeah. And with Ian, the only time we saw that was when that information was given to him from outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Above Ian is Nicole, who has moved up a little bit from last week, but nothing significant here. Still in the upper tier for Nicole. I am seeing a massive shift personally in how people are viewing Nicole. I'm surprised I didn't see more of that represented in the Legacy Watch, but perhaps again, the Legacy Watch tends to lag. So maybe we'll start to see it later on, or maybe by the time it was supposed to catch up, we're now back around on the she's definitely taking Cody to the end and we hate her again. But winning those two competitions in the end game, and now being like, now that Memphis is gone, like people want her to be the new final boss because they like they don't want it to be Christmas. And she's saying things close enough to maybe I'll cut Cody, that it's like, oh, and a previous winner. People really like the stats, and they like, two-time winner, first two-time winner. It's possible. And I've always felt like there was room for growth in terms of how people saw Nicole, because again, they didn't really give her the credit I felt she deserved for her 18 win. Like all season long, I feel like she's been doing a pretty good job with some, you know, glaring flaws throughout the season. And I think people are finally like, they have a reason to see those things where before they didn't want to. And now they're like, ooh, here we go. Okay, she's doing good. I don't know if it's going to last, I think, is the problem. If she wins the game, I think it'll stick. And I think she'll top tier easily if she wins the game. But if she doesn't win the game, if she gets cut, or if she takes Cody and she loses, I think all this goodwill is going to go down the drain, and she'll just be pretty much this. I think she still will have gained a little bit of traction. Again, confirmation that like it wasn't a fluke in 18. But still, you know, people don't like her very much, so.
I think what it is for me about Nicole is because I was starting to see the influx of support, and I completely agree. I think that she wasn't given the credit from her BB18 win that she really did deserve. That was one of those final twos where I felt they both deserved the win, they both deserved to lose, and Nicole was able to pull it out. Good for her. I think this season, the reason I'm always going to be so much more hesitant of giving her credit than I would maybe her BB18 game is because for me, it's sort of a similar argument I would make that I've already made for Cody. And I just feel like she came in such a fantastic position from jump. She had a lot of relationships coming in. She didn't have a lot of resistance coming in. She was just in such a really great position for success that she was able to sleep until whatever week we're in now, and now start wake up, win a competition or two. She cuts Cody. I think she absolutely deserves to win the game. But that's the only version that I feel that she is deserving.
Yeah, I think her legacy, I mean, we kind of said a little earlier in the podcast, right? It's like, she's one of these people, like, if she takes Cody to the end and loses, that is just going to be a dramatic negative for her, than even her just not being taken, or her being taken by him and losing. It's like, there's a lot on the line here for her. She might have, I mean, she just needs to really not, because I think people have come to respect that she is a good player, that she has a way of playing the game. But yeah, if she essentially makes that big mistake, it reframes everything, right?
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, I think a major thing with Nicole, and one of the reasons that she has had longevity as a winner coming into the game, is the fact that she is able to convince people that she is not a threat. She's able to convince people what she needs them to know. She was able to protect certain people, certain points. Like, there's a lot of really strong attributes. And I think people see the strong attributes, and I think they want to be able to credit her. And she just needs that final clinch to say, like, no, I am this player. This is the move that I made, and this is why I am deserving of being known as one of the top tier Dakota players ever.
Yep. All right. Above Nicole in the top tier is Cody. Still hanging out there. He did move up from last week, but not too significantly. Still toward the bottom of the top tier. Now, again, I think a lot of people took this survey prior to seeing the results of the veto. And I think the way that you view Cody is going to potentially dramatically change. Like, prior to the veto, it's like, he might be fourth place. After the veto, you're like, oh, he won the game. I'm definitely curious to see what this will look like this time next week. But for now, here he is. At the bottom of the top tier, if Cody wins this game, I don't think he has the legs for Pantheon. I don't think the audience will give it to him. Personally, I feel like he will rise in the ranks of top tier. I think he will probably overtake Kacer, probably overtake Tyler. I don't think he'll go past Janelle. Personally, I think Janelle will stay on top by the end of the season, even if Cody wins, even if he dominates the game, even if he wins unanimously. And I don't think he's going to crack Pantheon. If I go back to week three, when we put in some of the other players here, Derek did crack the Pantheon very, very barely, but he did. And that's where Derek is. So I expect that for now, I think Sharifa, you were right, that he will not be past Derek. But I think over time, over the years, perhaps, we may see him drift upwards as people remember that he dominated All-Stars. And I could see him eventually going into the Pantheon because, I mean, second place, first place, All-Star season, in such dominant fashion. I think it's going to happen eventually. I don't think it's going to happen right away, though.
I agree with you completely. I think people need distance from it. Because right now, people are like, was this All-Stars? Or was this Big Brother? This is who we can get, you know? And I think later, it's like, his placements are impressive. And I think there's going to be less bitterness about the season. And it's going to be, I don't want to use the word objective, but I think you're right that distance is needed. I think he's going to be regarded as a top player. Yeah. And I think no matter what happens, he's not going below this top tier. And I don't think this would have been said to him before Big Brother All-Stars. I think people always saw him as, you know, the guy who made the mistake. You pulled a Cody at the final two, you took the wrong person.
Let me just say that it was very difficult for him to climb out of where he started. He started in the upper tier low upper tier, and it, like, all season, it took a season of him dominating the game to very slowly, eventually, in terms of like how some people have moved, like Enzo's gone up way further than Cody has this season. And it has been a tough path forward for Cody. People really did not want to move him up, but he has. So that's just to add that to your point.
Yeah. Well, it makes sense to me in terms of like the kind of player he is, but you cannot deny the fact that like he has increased his legacy in a way that a lot of players have decreased their legacy. You have to give that to him because now you think about him and you know he's a good player versus before where you didn't.
Yeah, it was it's kind of like a kid that doesn't want to go to bed. It's like stomping up the stairs like slowly.
Yeah, literally.
Fine.
We kept trying. We're like, wait, but couldn't Memphis still win? No, go to bed. But couldn't Christmas go to bed?
Yeah. Literally.
The way it goes sometimes. All right. above Cody is, of course, well, maybe not, of course, Kacer. Kacer still here below Tyler. So this stuck. Last week, Tyler overtook Kacer's position. And I was like, maybe it's just because Tyler was just evicted. People are feeling very upset about it. Maybe they're just like, they really want to see Tyler go up. But no, Tyler actually went up from last week. So just, let me just make sure you're getting this. in week seven, Tyler was in the top tier, a low top tier position with Enzo just below him. And then in week eight, he stayed the same. In week nine, he was evicted and he stayed the same. And Kacer dropped below him. And then this week, he moved up. I have no idea.
Kacer was literally brought back into the house. They literally couldn't go without him. I feel like that was full legacy for Kacer right there.
This placement for Kacer makes so much sense to me. And I think it's almost similar to regards to Day and like her impact on her first season and her second season. Like, he wasn't here that long. But when he was here, boy, was he here. He was memorable. You think about All Stars, you think about Kacer, and that moment he was like, just bossed out, put the ball up in the little hole and was walking away like, you want to mess with this? That's what you think of. Tyler, I think, is that player that the more distance you have from his game in BB22, the more you want to credit him. And the thing about it, point blank, you cannot deny it. Tyler is an extraordinary player. I might have personal feelings about Tyler. Tyler is an extraordinary player. I can go into in-depth conversations about like privilege and how I will attribute Tyler as one of the best and how I won't necessarily say that for Cody. And I'll give you reasons why. I think my issue is with Tyler this season. He was playing fantastically and then he hit that Christmas HOH and that's when everything changed. So it's for me, I need that legacy to come down a little bit. Just a wee bit, just because I feel like he was such a top tier player that first game, and this time giving him the same credit for half the work doesn't sit well with me.
I wonder how much, like, because what's interesting about Tyler is I wonder how much, like, the fact that you can excuse that he like did it to himself, how much that sort of weirdly protects his legacy. You know what I mean? Like, it protects his legacy.
Like, because
I feel like you see a lot of people saying, oh, his heart wasn't in it, or, oh, he tanked his own game. You know, weirdly, even though you'd think that would not be a good thing for your legacy, you know, it's not like he came in, we thought he was great, and then he made these, even though he made mistakes, you know, so many of his mistakes can be attributed to that narrative. So that's such an interesting thing to think about. It's weird, like, that kind of protects him sometimes from criticism that other players who could come in and just bomb, you know, wouldn't be, right?
Something very similar happened with Dr. Will, actually, in the original All-Stars was, I argued with people on this very podcast years ago that like, oh, no. The only reason Will lost is because he didn't want to win.
Yeah, right.
That's it. I mean, it's definitely, you know, I think something that will help put a kind of a protective layer over at least Tyler's original season. And I think, Sharifa, that you made a really good point. I think that the reason Tyler's legacy was going down, because it started very, very high, is this season. And so the further we are away from Tyler in this season, the more we can kind of be like, all right, well, that was a thing, but remember BB20? It's right. Kind of like, it's the drift back up. It's the bounce back up that I was expecting for Keisha. But people actually watched Tyler's season. And so I think that's perhaps what we're seeing. We're seeing a bit of that bounce back. And I don't know, maybe Tyler won't end up dropping. Maybe this is where Tyler stays. And if it is, it might be tough for Cody to surpass him. We'll see. That might be one of the things to watch out for, but there we are. Kacer and then Tyler, and above Tyler last week, Janelle fell out of the Pantheon. And I went, whoa, this must be a fluke. I wonder if it'll stick. This week, it's stuck. She's still out of the pan. I don't know what happened.
That's interesting.
I'm so confused. I'm going to have to start requiring explanations because I mean, part of the fun is trying to explain, but I really don't know. Like, I, like, did something happen? Like, I don't know what it is. Yeah. It's the same amount of voters. It's not like people stopped voting.
I think it says something. Sorry, Brandon, were you going to say something?
No, I don't know.
Well, I think what it is that, like, what is impressive is how long she has stayed here. One point blank period, she's always going to be a legend. She should consistently be in that pantheon from Big Brother 6 to Big Brother 22. You think of Big Brother, you think of Janelle. Just in terms of, like, personality, player, so on and so forth. And I think it like shows how powerful her legacy was that she came in, she was the third boot, and she was still at the pantheon for how many weeks? And just now is there a bit of a drop for someone who left essentially third. So I'm not necessarily surprised just because there's been so much distance from being able to physically see her. I still think she is at that level.
And like, I'm with you. Like, I said this last week, I was expecting a slow drop, and we were seeing a slow drop. Like, she was up like halfway up in the pantheon and was seeing a slow decline. I was like, this is expected. I was like, I wonder if she'll stay in the pantheon by the end of the season with this slow drop. And then last week it was just like, boom, like 4 points down in the top tier all of a sudden. I was like, whoa. And she's same spot this time, this week. Like exact same spot, which led me to believe like something must have happened, but not as far as I'm aware. I mean, I'm seeing some people in chat say like they don't love her social media presence, but I'm kind of at a loss. I mean, I think we're floating some ideas, but Brendan, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I guess, yeah, maybe it is just a thing where. Where either it's, I guess, maybe social media presence, or yeah, maybe it is just that she hasn't been on the show that long. And maybe some of, like, you know, even after she was evicted, people were still so talking about her. And this idea of Danny was obsessed with surpassing her and like that legacy maintained. I mean, I think she's pantheon, but I guess maybe just in the later part of the game, her shadow hasn't quite cast that far, even though for a while there, it felt like even though she was gone, you know, she was still there in the house in a way.
People stopped talking about her.
Yeah, because we were still discussing her, you know. Yeah, I mean, but even on the podcast, there was so many people discussing still these ideas of people trying to live up to Janelle, people being jealous of Janelle and all this stuff, right? And it just sort of, that sort of stopped a little bit.
I mean, it's just so fascinating for me because, again, it's like, I imagine it's the same people voting every week. So it's not like, you know what I mean? So it's like those people, instead of putting Pantheon, they're just starting to put top tier, upper tier, whatever it is. I don't know. It's interesting. This is why I do this, because it's so interesting to me watching the shifts throughout the season and when they happen. And it's just like, this one is like particularly difficult to pin down, but there it is. And Kacer too. Kacer also dropped the same time, same amount. So it was really just like Janelle and Kacer just, you know, they were the king and queen, but you know what? I did see a Reddit post saying that they were planning on wearing crowns to the finale. Maybe people don't like that. I don't know.
I love that. That's so funny.
Yeah. And they'll be wearing shirts saying Pantheon as well. Yeah. To get themselves back up.
I'll say, I still do think it's impressive that for people who went out so early, that they still are. Yeah. So highly regarded. And I think that really speaks to their presence when they were here, that you still think about them when it comes to this game.
Yeah,
and they represent what could have been, you know? It's like, if only they'd been in the finals, then this would be amazing, you know?
It, literally, you look at this list, and all of upper tier and top tier are made of, you know, either people still in the game or who made the jury, except for Janelle and Kacer. Janelle and Kacer, two pre-jurors. The next highest pre-juror is Keisha in the middle tier. So, like, it does say a lot about their legacy, I think. I'm on record that Kacer is easily in my pantheon. You know, things happen. All right. So, that is the Legacy Watch. Thank you guys for joining us today. Really weird shape with the Legacy Watch. We started the season and it was like the opposite of this shape, where it was like a lot of people crammed at the top, and now we're starting to like push everyone down. But that's what we have. This was actually a fun podcast. There was a lot to talk about. Mm-hmm. We got through a lot of stuff. So, thank you guys so much for hanging out with us. Sharifa, any final thoughts before we wrap up here?
I think for me, what makes sense for this game to go is for Cody to win. Mm-hmm. And like, he would be a deserving winner for the game that he played. But I think they just so much want a little spice. Mm-hmm. I want a little shake. I want to see Cody get mm-hmm. the opposite of Cody. I think that if this season ends with that sort of fire, that Cody somehow loses when everyone is saying that he is going to win, I think it might be the only thing that can save the legacy of Big Brother 22 as a whole. Because right now, no one considers this an all-star season.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. It's that Josh and Paul thing. I mean, BB19 yeah. holds this place in people's hearts, you know, because people think about, whoa, that night where Josh somehow won. I mean, it's that weird thing, you know, I was shocked when that happened, because then it was Paul losing twice in the same way. And yeah, I think that I do think if Cody loses because of some kind of jury thing, I think it's, I don't know, that'll be interesting to see. But I feel like, yeah, if Enzo or Nicole actually cut him, I do think that is so exciting, especially if they do it, you know, in the way that we want them to. That could be really, really fun. But, you know.
And I feel bad rooting for a good player's demise. Yeah. But it's just so we have like go ahead.
What's interesting, though, is I do think that if one of them actually does cut him, though, even though Cody is still an amazing player, I feel like he wouldn't necessarily deserve totally to win over that person, right? That's what we always say about these players are so great because they put themselves in a situation where they're not going to be cut like that. So yeah, I mean, even though Cody played the better game, if Enzo and Nicole literally cut him because they beat him in the final HOH, it will be satisfying, you know?
Yeah. At least with that, like, in my opinion, at least, like, if he wins, or let's say Nicole wins, let's say Enzo wins, takes Cody to the end, and then Enzo wins the jury vote. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, yeah. Why? But yeah. Okay. And it's like, what did Cody do wrong? Jury management. Okay, what does that mean? What specifically did he do wrong? I guess he should have been nicer. Yeah. He should have made more relationships. Like, it's just so, it's not tangible. It's hard to like, it's not as fun. But if Enzo wins the final HOH, cuts Cody, takes Nicole, wins the jury vote, then it's like, what did Cody do wrong? He messed up with Enzo. He shouldn't have trusted Enzo. He let Enzo go. He messed up that relationship. Something slipped through the cracks. This is exactly what happened to Vanessa, Steve.
Right, right. And imagine that season, you know, where Steve gets taken by Vanessa and Austin and everyone are bitter. And like, that would be a super unsatisfying ending if Vanessa lost a bitter jury to Steve, even though we all know Steve.
And it doesn't necessarily mean that, like, if Enzo cuts Cody, that Enzo has now suddenly played a better game than Cody. Cody has been, you know, although I think there's actually, like, somewhat of an argument there. But it doesn't mean, like, just because Steve cut Vanessa doesn't mean Steve played a better game than Vanessa.
Satisfying winner.
Yeah, at least it's like, you see why Vanessa lost. It's, like, right there in front of you. And it's like, I mean, Steve deserves it for slipping through that crack. But when it's the jury vote, it's just like, where was the, I guess, what happened?
I guess I just don't see a world where he loses.
I agree.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh no. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's why it would be so perplexing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that.
Very much so. I think how Cody loses is what would make it. He has to get voted out the final three. If he makes it to the end and he loses in that final two, then that's sort of like, oh, all right.
Well. Yeah, it's kind of like if it's a race, there's two people racing, and they're like neck and neck for the finish line. But one of them is like very obviously the better sprinter, and you know that they're going to win because they're going to have the what's left in the tank to sprint to the end. And then like right before the end, like this is a no holds bar race, like no rules. somebody trips him. The guy, Enzo trips Cody and runs to the end. It's like, boom, I did it. Like, no, he's not the better runner, but like, woo, that was exciting. That was an exciting
race.
Versus he chooses, I'm not gonna trip Cody. And then Cody runs, he finishes first, and then the people with the trophy go and they say, we're not gonna give it to you. We're actually gonna give it to him.
Yeah.
It's like John beating Netta in a final two.
Yeah. It's like, what? Okay. I guess all along this wasn't about who was fastest. That's annoying. Like,
I know. And we've had seasons that have felt that way. The only other scenario that I think is, and I this is probably more fan fiction than anything, but I'm passing by the scenario where Cody takes Nicole and she is somehow able to like give a great final two, where she's like, I'm a two-time winner. I'm here. Cody took me. What a fool that he took
now,
me.
That would be fun.
You know, that could be interesting. Yeah. Like, that could be fun if she takes him, it's not as good. But if he takes her and she basically says, like, I did the same thing again. Paul shouldn't have taken me, and then I'm here now again. And like, I mean, if she can articulate it like that, that could be fun.
And if they actually did the jury segment the right way and they filmed it before, and it was like an hour too long, and like give somebody an opportunity to actually win votes over. And then we also have like diary room sessions from before and after explaining, you know, well, I came into this thinking I was going to vote. And like, let's say, let's not get too crazy with the artistic license here, but let's say as they're revealing their votes live, or maybe after they reveal their votes live, we have a little package of them explaining why they voted that way. Like, wow, you know what? Before the jury questioning, I was dead set on Cody, but man, Nicole really explained herself well, and I decided to change my vote. Like, that would be fun. That's all I'm saying.
Could you imagine that world, huh?
Yeah. All right. That's what we have for you today, this week. I'll, of course, be back tomorrow morning at 11 a.m. Eastern to update you on everything that happens today on the Big Brother 22 live feeds. And then tomorrow is Sunday, which means the day after, we're going to have a Monday episode, and we're going to recap that. And then Tuesday night, we'll have the stock watch. We're going to update the prices and the ratings, and we'll really do some more jury predictions and all that fun stuff. So tune in for that. You can find me on Twitter at Armstrong Taren, or on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taren Armstrong. I will also be live tomorrow night-ish, 5 p.m. Eastern, to play some Among Us with Puya, and Melissa will be there. Lots of fun people. So check that out. We'll have some fun there. Sharifa, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at @SharifaYasmin_ for all of my Big Brother hot takes. I'm also a theater director. I have a couple readings coming up. I'll post that information on my Twitter. So if you are interested in that, follow me for that. That's it.
All right. Brendan, where can people find you?
At Brendan KJ Meyer on Twitter and Instagram.
All right. Thank you guys once again for joining us. We'll see you next time.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.